Good evening. Welcome to tonight's meeting of Bethlehem City Council for Wednesday, November 6, 2019, here in Town Hall. Would all please rise for the invocation by Reverend Christine Johnson of Westside Moravian Church, followed by the Pledge of Allegiance.
Good evening. It's my privilege to be here tonight. Let's bow. Holy One, in this month of November, when it is, we are so ready to give thanks, we give thanks this evening for this wonderful city, for Bethlehem and its rich heritage, and its promising future, and its vibrant present. And that's why we're here tonight, to make sure that our city remains vibrant. Thank you for people who want to work together for the good of our community. Thank you for public servants who devote themselves to this work as well. This week, we thank you in particular for those who allowed and were motivated to let their names stand for election for offices, and regardless the outcome of each of those races, we are thankful that there are people willing to make that their priority to serve. And likewise, we are thankful for people who participate in democracy by coming not only to meetings like this, but to voting as well. I'm mindful right now of folks I have seen out on the streets of Bethlehem in bucket trucks and on ladders, looping garland around lampposts, and we're mindful that we're about to enter the season where lots of folks come to visit this beautiful town. We pray that we all benefit from that and that the visitors to this city are touched. Gracious One, make the deliberations this evening to be wise and mindful. Help us all to remember to be respectful, to act with our minds and with our hearts and fully participate, and always remember to treat our neighbors as we would like to be treated ourselves. Bless us with kindness, and thank you for the privilege. And we pray all together. Amen.
Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you, Reverend Johnson. Clerk, please call the roll.
Mr. Callahan.
Present.
Mr. Salone.
Present.
Ms. Cramsey Smith.
Present.
Ms. Negron.
Present.
Mr. Reynolds.
Present.
Dr. Van Wart.
Present.
Mr. Walden.
Present. Prior to consideration of our regular agenda items, City Council will conduct a public hearing to receive public comment on the request for an intermunicipal transfer of a Pennsylvania restaurant liquor license from outside the municipality into the City of Bethlehem. Restaurant liquor license number R3759 is currently held by Fun Bar, 702 to 726 Union Boulevard, Allentown, Pennsylvania. And the proposed transferee is Weiss Market Incorporated, 2285 Shanersville Road, Bethlehem, PA. Public hearings are conducted as follows. The President of Council will recognize a representative to make the presentation. Members of Council have the opportunity to make comments and ask questions, and the President of Council will recognize public for comment. The public hearing is called to order. I will recognize a representative from Weiss Markets to make the presentation on the proposed license transfer.
Good evening. My name is Ellen Freeman. I'm an attorney with Flaherty & O'Hara, and I'm here on behalf of Weiss Markets, Inc. I also have a representative from Weiss Markets, Inc. If I'm not able to answer any of the questions tonight, I may be able to step in and respond. Tim Snyder is in the back. He is the senior manager of architecture at Weiss Markets. And we are here to request that the City of Bethlehem approve a resolution which would permit the intermunicipal transfer of a liquor license to Weiss Markets. This liquor license will be used at a new Weiss Markets. You may have heard some of the rumors or seen some of the plans that Weiss Markets does intend to relocate just a few shops down, which was the old Bon Ton department store. Those plans are in their early phases right now. They're still working on definitive plans, definitive timeline, and as those plans continue to roll along, I'm sure they'll be back in front of the city to request any necessary permits, zoning, building, and all of that. But at this time, we are addressing just the liquor license transfer in the hopes that if it's a successful resolution approving the transfer, we'll have the liquor license in place for when the new store opens, which is projected to be 2020, sometime then. But again, it really just depends on when the turnover is, as well as construction. Weiss does intend to not have any interruption in service when this new remodel is taking place. So the day that the old store closes will be the day that the new store opens. So none of the customers will be interrupted with their grocery shopping. With that, I'll switch over to the topic this evening for the liquor license transfer. Weiss Markets does operate other liquor licenses in Pennsylvania. They currently have 74 open and operating stores in Pennsylvania with the beer and wine sales. They have 13 that are on the way, just waiting for construction or PLCB approval. They have several stores in the area, so if you've been to a Weiss that has the beer and wine sales, that will be modeled here and the one in Bethlehem, so they'll be very similar. I do have a floor plan to distribute. Again, very preliminary floor plan, subject to change, but I did want to give the council members an idea of what it would look like to help you envision what the beer and wine sales in section would look like. I'm going to just take
Thank you.
There will be two floor plans in front of you once you get that packet. The one is of the overall grocery store, which is approximately 47,600 square feet. And then the second floor plan is the enlarged section of what would be considered licensed by the Liquor Control Board, which is roughly 3,600 square feet. So it's a small portion of the grocery store, but what you're going to be looking at in that licensed premises will be seating for 30, which is pretty standard in the restaurants that are located within the grocery stores. There will also be prepared food options. The salad bar is located on the licensed premises. There will be sushi offerings, pizza, hot entree items, chicken. So it gives the customers an opportunity to sit down and have their dinner or lunch at the seating provided. Of course, there will be the beer and the wine then displayed in that area as well, and also a register which will capture all of the beer and wine sales. None of the front registers will accept those beer and wine SKUs, so just the register on the licensed premises, which will ensure that the associate who is checking out the patron knows all of Weiss's internal policies as well as has been RAMP certified. RAMP is the Responsible Alcohol Management Program, which teaches the associate anything from how to card a patron, how to spot a fake ID, how to use a card scanner transaction device to make sure that it's not a fraudulent ID. So with the card scanner transaction device, it's used on every single ID. Weiss has a 100% carding policy. So no matter what your age, you're going to be carded by an associate, and your card will go through that card scanner transaction device. And this really just removes the gray area from carding and from IDing someone and selling alcohol. You don't have to do a judgment check of whether someone is of age. They just card across the board. The proposed hours of operation for the entire grocery store will be Monday through Saturday from 6 a.m. to 12 a.m. and Sunday from 6 a.m. to 10 p.m. The alcohol sales will be minimized from that. It's Monday through Saturday from 8 a.m. to midnight, and Sunday from 9 a.m. to 10 p.m. They will be limited to serving, to allowing 192 fluid ounces of beer to go, roughly two standard six packs, and then they're permitted to sell 3,000 milliliters of wine to go, which is roughly four standard bottles of wine. They do allow for on-premises consumption. Their in-house policy is that you are limited to two beers or two pours of wine per visit. It's very limited. They have, like I mentioned, 74 other stores with this same model in place, and they found that very few patrons take advantage of on-premises consumption. The licensed premises is always staffed with associates who have been trained. So they've also been trained to monitor the seating and take notice of anyone who is consuming alcohol so that their policy stays in place and that that individual is only consuming the maximum of two. In addition to that, twice a year, Weiss has in-house asset protection agents go in and check their grocery stores for compliance measures. This gives Weiss the opportunity to see how their associates are doing, making sure that all their internal policies are in place, and to make sure that if something is not in place, that all the associates are then retrained on the correct policies. And we all know mistakes can happen, and Weiss wants to prevent that as much as possible, so this gives them that opportunity to do so. With that, I'll turn it back over to the City Council members and the public for any questions.
Thank you, Ms. Freeman. We've been through a few of these in the past recently, working with Giant Food Store, which is have a lot of similarities in the business model, it seems like. Could you give me a little bearing as to the, looking at the map in front of us, the floor plan, where the front of the store would be and directionally kind of north-south, Shanersville Road is the front of the store?
Or? Yeah, Shanersville Road is the front of the store. So as you're looking at that, the licensed premises, which is shaded on the overall, is in the front right-hand side of the grocery store.
Okay, so that would be the northwest corner?
That's correct.
Understood. What is the nearest Weiss store to us, proximity-wise, that is currently selling alcohol?
There is, and I'm sorry, Tim, you told me right beforehand. Could you just...
Cedar Crest Boulevard, downtown, the Morning Work store on Hamilton Boulevard.
Cedar Crest, I'm sorry, I'm just going to repeat it so that everyone can hear. Cedar Crest Boulevard in Allentown, and...
Hamilton Boulevard in Allentown.
Hamilton Boulevard in Allentown.
Store and Bath on Route 5 and 12.
Store and Bath on Route 5 and 12.
Understood. Okay. And on the second page here with the close-up, in the right corner, there's a proposed secure remote beer storage. What is that?
So that's pretty standard in all the grocery stores as well. They are permitted by the Liquor Control Board to have a remote storage. So it, by law, must be lockable at all times. They must tell the Liquor Control Board who has the key, who's able to open and access it, and that's just where, you know, their stock will go of both beer and wine.
And that'll be back of the house, I imagine?
That's correct.
Understood. Are there any other questions or comments from members of council? Mr. Callahan?
Thank you, Mr. President. Yeah, so the consumption of the alcohol is limited to two cans or bottles, whatever. Is there any precautions in place to prevent anybody from, once they open up a container, from leaving with a half-filled or three-quarter-filled container and having an open container? Violation.
Yeah, by law they're not permitted to do so. It is a municipal law. If you have an open container law, they aren't permitted to take it outside of the store. In terms of Weiss's precautions, their register is purposefully placed so that it monitors the seating, so it's manned at all times. So someone is always monitoring what's going on there, and that is certainly something that they're taught right away, that no one is permitted to leave that licensed section at all with open alcohol, let alone leave the store with it.
All right, thank you very much.
Sure.
Thank you. It doesn't seem like there's any other questions or comments from members of council. Thank you. Moving on, are there any comments or questions from, are there any comments from members of the public? Seeing none, the resolution for the liquor transfer will be placed on tonight's council agenda. The meeting, the public hearing is adjourned. Moving on with our regular agenda items, approval of the minutes for October 1st and October 15th. Are there any comments from members of council? Seeing none, the minutes stand approved. Public comment on any subject not being voted on this evening with a 5-minute time limit. We have a few names signed up on the list, and then we'll open it up to other members, other attendees who want to make comment. Again, this is for anything not being voted on this evening with a 5-minute time limit. So if I call your name, you can step up. Please state your name and address for the record and address your remarks to council. Chris, on our first name on our list is Chris Bartleson. I'll open it up if there's anyone else. So everyone here will have an opportunity to speak after I work through these names on the list. I'll move across the room. So if you do want to speak, it's as simple as putting your hand up. We'll skip Chris for now. Richard Master.
My name is Richard Master, 250 East Makeda Road in Bethlehem, Pennsylvania. I'm here with my wife and a number of supporters for the Medicare for All referendum that you're going to be is going to be presented. Excuse me, resolution. Thank you for considering this resolution and permitting us to speak in support. We're trying to limit the number of folks who speak in view of the busy agenda of the council. We are joined by many folks tonight, union representatives, the Women's March state coordinator. We have 800 members of the Lehigh Valley Task Force for Medicare for All. I'm going to make a little joke. They are on 12 buses around the corner ready to launch, but not a great joke. The state director of Medicare for All is here, Noah Levinson. We face a crisis. Our nation's healthcare sector is eating the rest of the economy and our society alive. A family plan at my company, MCS Industries, cost $28,000 a year. That's $14 an hour. Our costs are rising, and we're expecting a 10% increase next year. The burden of healthcare expense on this city is profound, and moreover, it's volatile. You don't know from 1 year what the increase in cost is going to be, and it's very difficult to budget. The only way to get this issue under control is by instituting a federally financed, privately delivered healthcare system known as Medicare for All. Medicare for All will substantially reduce administrative cost, pharmaceutical and hospital costs for this city and its residents. Most importantly, it will keep cost increases under control into the future. At the same time, it will provide health care coverage to many Bethlehem residents who are now uninsured and to those many more who are underinsured and are foregoing care because they can't afford the high deductibles, co-pays, etc. Incremental reform will not do the trick. We've tried that. This city and its taxpayers cannot afford more of the status quo. The resolution before you is also slated to be presented to Easton City Council and ultimately Allentown as well. Last night, the City Council of Los Angeles passed the same resolution in support of federal Medicare for All legislation, joining San Francisco, New York, Seattle, Minneapolis, and in Pennsylvania, Philadelphia, Pittsburgh, Norristown, Reading, and many other cities across the country. Of particular note is that our Congresswoman, Susan Wild, is a co-sponsor of Medicare for All in the House, H.R. 1384. We need to support her in this effort. Let's speak as one, one valley, one voice, advocating real reform to health care for our citizens and our city. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Master. And I don't want to pause or break the momentum of the topic at hand. So in our council agenda, if you will, our first public comment, we have two public comments. The first one is on any subject not being voted on this evening. I know there's a lot of folks here in support of the food co-op as well as Medicare for All. Since we will be voting on those resolutions this evening, those would really be more germane on your second public comment. So first public comment is essentially for anything that we're not going to be voting on. So it looks like there may be one person who signed up previously to speak on there. It's Mr. McGeehan, I'm not sure the topic of your comments.
My topic is classified, but I'm not going to talk about that.
Okay. It may have to become unclassified at some point, Colonel. Now, everybody else who signed up here looks like would be more appropriate under second public comment. So we'll move through first public comment and then kind of shift over to some of those topics that you'd like to talk about that we will be taking action on this evening. So starting on this side of the room, is there anyone who'd like to speak on any subject that we will not be voting on this evening? Colonel,
yep.
You have the floor.
Mr. Mayor, President of the Council, all my friends that are here, some of my enemies, I'm glad to see you. So,
and if you please state your name and address.
John McGeehan, John James Bernard McGeehan, 375 13th Avenue, Bethlehem, Pennsylvania. I'm here to comment. I am not happy about on 13th and Broad with the Family Dollar Store having 8-foot weeds sticking up in the middle of Broad Street, selling propane, and having sales every day out in their parking lot with hanging dresses or whatever they're selling at a discount. I don't think it's appropriate. I don't think it's zoned for that, and I am not happy about it. And they are not a good neighbor. And the neighbors in my neighborhood, we are not happy. I just want to let it. If anybody in the council has any questions for me, ask me now. You have a question?
I don't.
I am not happy. You, soldier, you got a question? You? Johnny Boy?
Good.
Got a question?
Yes, sir.
Question? Willie?
It's confidential.
Atta boy. Keep it that way, miss. Okay. I'm not happy. I'll tell you something. It's not good for our neighborhood, and it's got to change. Mayor? Am I clear?
Very clear.
Feedback. Okay. Number two is, the other thing I'm not happy about, I don't like people being able to have a beautiful business and start putting pictures up on their walls. I'm not happy about what they did in 3rd Street. And to me, as a Bethlehem steel worker back in the 50s and early 60s that I worked, my father and my son, I don't like that sign that has been next to the mobile station that they drew of Bethlehem steel workers. I'm not happy about that, to say the least. Number two is I'm not happy about people putting signs on their walls on West Broad Street or East Broad Street or anywhere in Bethlehem. I am not sure if they are allowed to do that. And have they asked permission to put those signs up and draw? I want to give you an example. Abe's Beer House and the Veterinary Clinic. Beautiful people, wonderful people. But I want to tell you something. We got to stop this. The next thing we're going to do, it'll be Times Square, downtown Broad Street. I'm not happy. Anybody have any questions about that?
No, sir.
How about you?
Okay,
so I think you know where I'm coming from here. You know, we got a beautiful town here. Don't let this thing get away from you. I realize times have changed from when Mayor Donches and I grew up together, but you know, you got a beautiful spot here. Keep your zoning rules tight. And if you don't, think you're not going to be happy in the end, and neither will our children. So thank you very much for your time.
Interrogation complete.
Yeah. Any questions from the neighborhood?
Good. Thank you, Colonel. Mr. Gallagher, see if you can top that.
Colonel, drop the paper.
Oh, thank you. Okay. You know what they call that? The stay behind the voice. We always got the answers for this mayor. You know that.
Ed Gallagher, following a pro here, you can tell. Ed Gallagher, 49 West Greenwich. Just a shout out to the city for the new website. I work a lot on the web and dealing with city matters. Good to see. I know that took a lot of time, a lot of effort, a lot of thinking, a lot of money. I think I was reminded today. We appreciate that effort. I'm going to be interested over the next couple of weeks of going through the website. There are some elements there that weren't on the previous website, and I kind of want to familiarize myself with them and what the value of those things will be. While I was looking at the website, it occurred to me that I don't believe we've heard about any results from the communication survey that was done a couple of months ago. So if there's anything there that would be of interest, I think people would like to hear that while I'm thinking about it. President Waldron, there's no vote on the community development report tonight, the Bethlehem Food Co-op, or is there? Is there a vote on that? I wonder if my comments are appropriate here or in the next.
You can speak now if you'd like.
Okay. The Gallagher House is a member of the Bethlehem Food Co-op, and the Gadfly blog has promoted the Bethlehem Food Co-op. That community mission is right in the heart of the Gadfly project. But I must admit, I was surprised at the community development meeting about that source of the funding for the Bethlehem Food Co-op. And I thought several of the questions raised there were legitimate and genuine questions. And I didn't think that they were answered specifically. So what I would say is I would hope there's some more information and perhaps some more confirmation, some more conversation about the questions raised at the Community Development Committee meeting. Now, I did some amateurish web searching and found a HUD document that clearly highlights a food co-op as a legitimate source of HUD funding. So it doesn't seem to me that there's any inherent reason why a co-op could not be funded by the HUD grants. But there were three clear guidelines or criteria that HUD set down for approval of those grants. I think I would like to make sure that what the co-op is asking for fits specifically in those guidelines. The document I saw indicated that the co-op was asking for $189,840. It's a very specific amount, so I mean, it sounds like an estimate for something. And all we know is it's physical, improvements. I wonder if we couldn't get more information about that. If the food co-op is approved for this money, I would hope that it's cleanly done so that there's no shadow that hangs over it. So again, I'm a member of the co-op. I promoted it on the blog, but I thought the questions raised were genuine, and I didn't think they were specifically answered. So my hope would be that we would get some more information and more conversation, so as that goes forward, there's no shadow that hangs over the co-op if the money is approved for them. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Gallagher. Is there anyone else on this side of the room who'd like to make comment on a subject not being voted on this evening? Moving into the center, is there anyone who'd like to make comment? Mr. Shire?
Bill Shire, 1898 Avenue. Last time I enumerated seven apartment projects in various stages of approval in the city. I don't know how I forgot Martin Tower, 528 apartments, the Flatiron Flats, which raises it to nine. Might as well throw in the Polk Street apartments, they're already built, that's 10. There's a new one that was got its variances, a bunch of variances, at the last meeting of the Zoning Hearing Board on Van Buren Street. It's a relatively small project, but there's a few apartments in there. And then there's one really old one that predates many of you on the council, and that's Elliott Heights in the southwestern portion of West Bethlehem. It was mainly row houses, but there were also some apartments there. So to recap, we have constructed or have proposed or in various stages of approval 12 apartment projects in the city of Bethlehem. 5 on the south side, 4 on the west side, and 3 on the north side. On the south side, it would be Wilbur Mansion, Flatiron Flats, 4th and Vine, Polk Street, Van Buren Street. On the west side, Martin Tower, Elliott Heights, The Armory, and Skyline West. And on the north side, the Boyd Theater, 546 North New, and the 700 block of North New. And I was just thinking today back over all these cases and just coming up with a rough estimate of the variances that have been granted. Half of these projects have gone through the variance process, and a very rough estimate, probably underestimated, but let's say 30 variances were requested, 2 were rejected. That's a 90% approval rate when a developer appears before the zoning hearing board. Now, it's been said that, oh, but they turned down more variances than that. The ones they turned down are the single family who wants to have a daycare. But when developers appear, 90%. And it would seem that the zoning hearing board has a desire to see Bethlehem change its character. And it's up to us to decide if that's what we want Bethlehem to become. Do we want it to become a more dynamic, a more busy, a more congested, a more noisy, and become like many other small cities with pretensions? Thank you.
Anyone else in the center who'd like to speak? In the side of the room? Yes.
Renting from St. Luke's Hospital for 20 years and suddenly found ourselves asked to leave suddenly, and we had 6 months to find a new home. Luckily, we found the Gateway at Greenway at 306 South New Street, and we're currently there because we wanted to stay in Bethlehem. We've been here 25 years. And our problem is we, as a private practice, trying to survive with all the big hospital expansions, we suddenly find ourselves with a parking issue where our patients are forced to pay $1 an hour. They come to our office 5-6 days a week, 6-7 hours a day, and it's quite costly for them. And as a private practice, we can't afford to cover it. And the other two big tenants were given some spots for free when they built the building and said that they had no more allowance and that we were on our own. We're asking for some type of understanding for our cancer patients. We reached out to the parking authority, and they said that a cancer patient should not be considered any different than an Army veteran or an elderly person, and they should have no special consideration. Our point was, it's something that you already have a hardship, and they're not, you know, going to a restaurant or a local barbershop. They're 5-6 days a week, 6-7 that hours a day at our facility. Just don't know where to go with that.
I can appreciate that being a challenging issue as you're trying to serve your patients. Council, unfortunately, does not have much leverage or say in the issue of parking. The only thing we can do is raise the fine increase. So I might say you could maybe turn to the mayor during his office hours and you reach out to him. Obviously, I would have directed you to the parking authority, but you've already tried that route. There may be some creative solution that is possible to try to help alleviate some of that stress. Unfortunately, there's nothing that we can really do to other than let you know that we support you and understand that that's a challenging situation. If there's anything that we can do, you could always follow up with our city clerk and email us individually or email the city clerk. But I would maybe point you to the administration, as they're the full-time representatives of the city.
I'll talk to her right now.
Okay. The mayor said that if he'd like to step out into the hallway, might be able to touch base and at least start a dialogue.
Okay. Yeah, I just wanted to add, I am a medical oncologist, and I've been resident at St. Luke's in the 80s, and I decided to come back after my fellowship and practice here. And I only was at this campus in Bethlehem, no other hospitals, for 30 years. And I think it's, I need community to know that, you know, we really want to serve community. And I think we're providing excellent care, you know, in terms of medical expertise and emotional support to those patients. And I think you need to know that we are offering different kind of services than big hospitals around the country, and I think we make a difference, but we need support. And I would really appreciate it if you do something for us.
Understood. Thank you. Is there anyone else who'd like to make comment on any subject not being voted on this evening? Mr. Indalex?
Stephen Intalix, 737 Ridge. Our distinguished scholar didn't have his Bethany moment tonight, but I'll continue with the alternative moment as to possibly the true history of Bethlehem. So bear with me. Many people observe the differences between North Bethlehem and South Bethlehem. In addition to the ethnic mix, there's also possibly another reason. The majority of immigrants to this country are of German ethnicity. And back in the days of the founding of Bethlehem and subsequent years after, prior to the Revolutionary War and the founding of North Bethlehem as a borough, there were two words very popular then to describe what was happening. And the words were Gesellschaft and Gemeinschaft. Gesellschaft is business and Gemeinschaft is society. The Notabraska from Husserl's time, which then became Unitasfratrum, then Moravian, the church was the center of the community, and members of the church were constrained as to how they could operate, and as a result, religion was the key ingredient, and there was no, for instance, there were dormitories, which then became the sister's house, because group living then was common to the people there, but also they were discouraged from standing out or making money. So therefore, industry didn't develop well in North Bethlehem or an area north of, but then South Bethlehem, land sold to developers began to develop the south side or the area south of the river. And since there are no restraints or religious concerns, industry developed. And one of the best industry in the country was the Bethlehem Iron Works, Mr. Fritz, which then became Bethlehem Steel. And it grew because Lehigh University, Mr. Packer, hired the best faculty, and the best metallurgists were teaching at Lehigh, and they then were teaching the people at Ironworks. So the best steel made in the country and in the world was in Bethlehem.
So then other industries grew because no restrictions. So South Bethlehem had a university, the hospital, Bethlehem Steel, and other industries. And the demands of these industries brought in from Eastern Europe immigrants. So these immigrants, Polish, Hungarian, Slovenian, Czech, Slovak, gave the South Side a tremendous ethnic mix. So the ethnic purity on this North Side, being primarily Moravians, since non-Moravians could not own property, so it gave the city, not the city, but the areas, a very different flavor. And that flavor is still very apparent today because we speak of North Bethlehem and the South Side. So that's my alternative moment. Thank you.
Is there anyone else who'd like to make comment on the subject not being voted on this evening?
Yeah, I have a comment. I have a point of order. Can I ask a question?
No, sir. It usually stays to the end, though. We'll move on with the names that are previously signed up, moving through our list here. Anthony Downing. Yep, we're on public comment now, second public comment. So this is for any ordinance or resolution to be voted on this evening. So I'll move through the half dozen names or so that previously signed up, and then we'll do the same process moving around the room. If you'd like to speak, just raise your hand.
Hello, Council. My name is Anthony Downing. I live at 626 West Lehigh Street. I'm here in response to the resolution on Medicare for All. I'm going to ask the council members to strongly consider voting yes on the resolution to support Medicare for All. I currently, as a working class person in Bethlehem, Pennsylvania, who is also a union member, who's also a union staff member, currently am in gripping debt due to my own medical costs. I hear a lot of the conversation today about how union members want to keep something they negotiated. And I don't know many union members that don't want to give it back and just allow us to be able to go to any doctor whenever we need to, without a copay, without a fee, without having to worry about going into debt over our own medical bills. My mom passed away a couple years ago. She passed away paralyzed due to genetic issues in her spine that she can't help. And currently I have those same issues. This year alone, actually within the last 2 months, I had two spine surgeries, one on my neck and one on my lower back. This entire year I've been having MRIs. This entire year I've been having physical therapy. This entire year I've been racking up medical debt just so that I can go and have two major surgeries and then be drowning in some more. There is absolutely no way out in the system that we currently have now. There is no way currently now. A few years ago, I had to pay $90,000, which I don't have. And I don't know many people in this room that do. And if you do, I want to be your friend. But there is an incredible amount of money that I had to pay. One 90-day prescription was $90,000. And that is what a working person in America is supposed to pay for a medication. And it was actually a life-saving medication. I actually needed it because the what it was killing was something that could end up being fatal. And the insurance company fought me because I wasn't sick enough. So I'm coming here basically not only as an advocate for my own personal, you know, issues and drowning in medical debt, but also for the people of Bethlehem. The people in Bethlehem right now, I know people that in this room right now that have to make a decision on whether they can go to the doctor because they can't afford the copay. There are people in this room right now that have to make a decision on whether they're going to buy medicine or whether they're going to buy food or whether they're going to be able to care for their child when they have to go out for surgery or things like that. So I strongly encourage everybody to really think about the debt that is incurred. And this stuff is not just about personal debt. It's about a debt on the city. It's about the city ends up having to pay for these things. It's the hospitals that end up having to flip the bills. It's the, most people that end up having to go to that don't have insurance, they go to the emergency room when they're sick because they can't afford to go anywhere else. And what does the emergency room bill them? I don't even want to think about that. And I was once one of those people who didn't have insurance and had to go to the emergency room every time. So, I'm not up here with a whole bunch of numbers. I'm just a regular working class person. I'm a proud union member of SEIU Healthcare Pennsylvania. I work for a healthcare union. And I watch our own members, people who are delivering healthcare, doctors, nurses, and CNAs, housekeepers, the people that clean up the hospital rooms that we have to stay in, that can't even afford to go to the hospital themselves. So I just implore you all to really consider supporting this resolution. We won't be the first, and we're not going to be the last. I truly believe in the resiliency of the people of Bethlehem. I believe in the courage that we have to get out front of these kinds of issues and to be a leader in what's the cure for the problem here. And the cure for the problem here is the current state of healthcare in this country. And I truly, truly believe that you guys will make the right decision.
Thank you, Mr. Downing. Next name set up is Noah Levinson.
Thank you, Council, for holding this resolution. My name is Noah Levinson. I'm a guest of Richard Master, Anthony DSA. I live in Scranton, Pennsylvania, but this is really exciting to be here because my family immigrated into Pennsylvania from Europe in the 1500s in Northampton County. I'm the executive director of Healthcare for All PA. It's a statewide Medicare for All organization, and I'm also one of the national organizers. It's great. Everybody's sort of heard of Medicare for All by now, which is really exciting. They have an idea of what it may or may not be. Why are we here at council talking about this, right? You guys can't make this happen, right? So why are we here? Medicare for All is extremely popular. 70% of the country supports it. That's over half of Republicans and 85% of Democrats. It is extremely popular because people are extremely dissatisfied with the healthcare system in this country. There was a 2017 Bloomberg poll that ranked the three least trusted institutions in the United States of America. At the bottom, pharmaceutical companies, as they should be. Second, the least trusted is health insurers. Third, United States Congress. So our healthcare system is broken because our political system is broken. We understand being here won't get us Medicare for All tomorrow, but the reason why we don't have it is because we lack champions, and we're desperately seeking them. Healthcare is extremely local, right? My dad is a pulmonary doctor in Scranton. If there's any guesses why there'd be a lung doctor in Scranton, black lung. And growing up, they had an independent practice, and wow, the wonderful coincidence, although very common to see these issues all coming together, of the cancer center having their parking issue, right? It's very rare to find independent practices anymore with this consolidation, with this absolute need to make as much money as possible from health. I guess I took it for granted when I hear stories around the dinner table that, you know, oh, there was a patient today who couldn't afford their copay, but I let it slide. You know, $10 a poor ex-coal miner, past coal miner, is a lot. So family practices can say, don't worry about it. Large health insurance companies, large hospital networks, consolidated medicine, they go by the books. So the reason we're here on council is because there's support and we need more champions in the United States. I think less than a year ago, there was a televised national town hall in this town. And one of the questions that was brought up was about Medicare for All. Would you support it? Would you, you know, eliminate your private insurance, keep your hand in the air? The room was overwhelmingly supportive of it. That's because the country is. I work in rural areas, urban areas, and there is an incredible amount of support for this. The reason is that as you've all run for office, you know what people talk about most on the doors that, you know, when they come here sometimes. My dad's a doc, we hear it all the time. People talk about their health. It's an extremely personal story, and it's very specific to each person. And everybody sort of knows they're going to get screwed by the system here. Personally, I'm 29 years old, so I've been off of my parents' health insurance for 3 years, and in that time, I've already experienced it with unpaid hospital bills when I've been uninsured. I was diagnosed with a benign brain tumor over the summer. Should be okay. But every time the doctor said, you know, hold your plans for 2 weeks, you might have brain cancer. We have to find this out. We may have to operate immediately. Every single test my doctor ordered, every single scan was denied by my insurance company. And we figured it out, but when you're getting ready to drive down to Philadelphia at 5 a.m. and get a phone call on the way there that says, oh, we're not gonna pay for your scan, don't get it, even though your doctor wants it, you realize that people die because of this system. And it's very common that anyone in this room could die because of it. We're about the same distance here from the border to Canada. It's actually about the same distance to Pittsburgh, fun, Ontario. But I like doing this thing where I, you know, bring friends up to Canada and say, explain to this Canadian our healthcare system. Explain how it works. Explain pre-approvals. Explain co-pays. Explain deductibles. They're like, car deductibles? No, they explain deductibles. It's absurd that it's 2019 and this is still the way it is. And the reason it is, as I said, our healthcare system is broken because our political system is broken. So we're here asking you to vote for this because we need support wherever we can get it. We need our 5 minutes to talk about this because, you know, insurance companies aren't listening. Congress isn't listening. We need it where we can get it. Thank you very much for having this hearing. Thank you for voting for it. And thank you for my time, I guess.
Thank you, Mr. Levinson. Next on our list is Emily Hishman.
Thank you. I live at 905 West Broad Street, Unit 3. My name is Emily Hishman, and I am here to implore the council to vote yes on the Medicare for All resolution. I work at Zulily, not too far from here. I get paid $13.75 an hour, and I get $50 taken out of my paycheck every week to pay for my health care. If I were to walk out of this building right now and break my ankle, I would be out of work and financially devastated. And that is all too often the story for people here in this room and in Bethlehem. The Lehigh Valley has top-of-the-line healthcare, and the working-class people of this area cannot afford it. I had a bill for a walk-in visit that was over $100. Medicare for All would not just benefit me, but everyone in our community, and I'm excited to add Bethlehem's name to the list of cities supporting this resolution. Let's show everyone that single-payer, universal, comprehensive, and free at-the-point-of-service healthcare is popular everywhere in this country. Thank you.
Thank you. The next name on our list is Hillary Clinton. Pardon me, Clinton.
President Clinton. Yeah, my name's Hillary Clinton. I live at 528 North Muhlenberg. I'm an Allentown resident, and I'm here tonight because I want to encourage you guys to support the Medicare for All bill. I wanted to share my own personal story with the hell I've been through my entire adult life with the healthcare system. When I was 23 years old, my mom and I were traveling to Erie for my younger sister's college graduation. And on the way there, my mom started driving incredibly erratically and very quickly, and she wasn't responding to me in the car, and she pulled over the nearest rest stop, and she was gasping for breath and couldn't catch her breath. This was before we had GPS on all of our phones, so I had to find a staff member, tried to ask him where I could get an ambulance. He couldn't help me, but he did give me directions to the nearest hospital. So we stopped in Grove City, and if you have never been there, it's halfway in between Pittsburgh and Erie. They admitted her to the hospital, and they found that a few days later, I had to continue on to Erie for my sister, but a few days later, after they admitted her, they found out that she had idiopathic cardiomyopathy with left ventricle dysfunction, which basically means at the age of 48, my mom went into heart failure. at the time, she had just graduated, putting herself through school for her bachelor's 2 years before, and I had helped her buy a house at the age of 23, and we came home eventually after she was transferred to Pittsburgh and they could get a better hands on her condition. We brought her home, and it took her years to get on the right medications to stabilize her condition, 3 years. In that time, she lost her job. She was an administrator at the Montgomery County Senior Center. She lost her job, she lost her insurance, she lost her home because she didn't pay her mortgage, and then she went bankrupt, and I moved her into my house. 5 years later, I had my first child, and some of you have seen her. She's like, seems like a pretty normal kid. When she was born, she had a low muscle tone, and when we took her into the doctors, they recommended a really intensive physical and occupational therapy program for her. She had to have 3 visits a week from the age of 3 months old to 3 years old. My insurance at the time covered 17 visits a year. So we made the decision that obviously any developmental delays that she would have weren't worth it, so we took on the debt. It was $25,000 a month for an infant. And she eventually qualified for Medicaid because of her condition, and she was able to get the treatment that she needed without bankrupting my family. But no family should have to go through that. My mom didn't do anything wrong, she just got ill. My daughter was born with a condition. No one deserves to go through that. No one deserves to lose their home, lose all of their security. No one deserves to potentially lose their lives, which would have happened to my mom if she didn't get the care that she needed immediately. I currently don't have insurance because my job changes very often and I change employers, and if I miss the gap on the open enrollment period because I can't afford the premiums, then I'm uninsured, which I am currently, which means that I don't do risky behaviors, I don't go skiing, I don't do anything that could possibly harm me. If I get sick, I try to wait it out, and that's what most of us are dealing with because we can't afford the bills anymore. So I applaud you for bringing this to the floor, and I just want to really encourage all of you to vote yes on this resolution. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Glenn. That's the full list of folks who signed up beforehand. So again, I'll start on this side of the room for anyone who'd like to make comment on any resolution or ordinance to be voted on this evening. Yes, sir.
Hello, my name is Kelly Allen. I live at 238 West Fairview Street, and I am the recently elected chair of the board of the Bethlehem Food Co-op. I've learned that you can say a lot in 5 minutes if you have it all planned out. So to keep from missing anything and also to be respectful of our time here, I'm just going to read some prepared notes. So what I want to do is talk about our commitment, the co-op's commitment, to moderate to low-income groups living in our community. To do so, I feel the need to share a little bit about who I am. I think it is important that when I talk about the poor, that I share that I, and thus the co-op, are speaking from a position of experience. I did not grow up in the Lehigh Valley. I'm originally from a rural community in western Pennsylvania. When I was a kid, my family and I had to deal with the physical and emotional challenges of being poor. Thankfully, our apartment was on a piece of land that allowed us to have a garden, and it was also connected to an area of woods that allowed us to hunt. Everything we ate, we grew and hunted. Looking back on that now, I realize that we are very privileged to have that space and the knowledge of how to work with it. Otherwise, we would not have had the resources to feed ourselves. We were on food stamps, but those can only go so far, and during the 80s, the public cry for healthy food options for low-income families was essentially non-existent. We also know that being poor has a physical and emotional impact on people far beyond being cold and hungry. The frustration and shame that an individual can feel for not being able to provide for themselves and their family can sometimes result in verbal and physical violence that no person should deal with, let alone a small child. To address this, it is important to build a strong community that supports one another. My wife and I moved to this beautiful community in 2009. When we heard about the Bethlehem Food Co-op and what they wanted to do for the community, There was no hesitation in our signing up. What the co-op aims to do will service the needs of people who are in many ways like my family growing up. During the time that we have been building our co-op, we have been building relationships with local food producers to ensure that the products we have in our store are local and healthy, and we have also been building relationships with our community so that we know that what we bring into our store is reflective of their needs. We've built many of these relationships through our education program and community conversations. An example is a course we have developed. It's one where we meet people at a local grocery store and share with them strategies for making healthy choices on a budget. The same class then meets the following week at a certified kitchen to learn how to prepare meals in a fashion that is respectful of their time and their culture. And we're not just about food. The reason I could not be here last week was because I was facilitating our Community Hubs meeting at William Penn Elementary, where we are developing a Spanish and English language program for adults and children. This program will provide both Spanish and English native speakers an opportunity to teach each other their language and culture. We are doing great things in this community, and we are extremely thankful for the support from our city in the past and hopefully in the future. On behalf of the board, I want to say thank you. That poor kid from Western Pennsylvania, who's still very much a part of who I am, thanks you. I know that we are going to continue to make this city proud of the work that we do. So thank you again. Have a good night.
Thank you, Mr. Allen. Is there anyone else on this side of the room who'd like to make a comment? Yes, sir.
Can I just speak about anything?
Anything. I know you missed an earlier opportunity, so. We always like what you have to say, Mr. Toy. You brought your caddy, too, it looks like. Come on down.
I need a walker, too.
Putting lessons here.
What I have here, before I tell you who I am, is golf equipment that I play with now. Golf equipment I played with when I started to play golf. I'm very proud of our golf course around here. But my name is Jack Toy, 13 West Washington Avenue. And this evening has been enlightening and sad. And I can say for myself that I paid into Social Security for 62 years. I'm 83 years old. I paid from 55 to 17. And I've experienced some of the sadness that was expressed in here tonight's situations where you pay into something and you get back 10% on it, or they don't cover it at all. All that good thing. But on the lighter side of life, you're responsible for a nice golf operation. The last time I was here, none of you played golf. Do any of you on the council play golf? I said play golf, not play around. As an aside, he was my neighbor. That's why I live at West Washington Avenue. I used to live Main Street, 621, three doors down.
I got private golf lessons from him.
He's not a very good learner. What I came in tonight to say is that when I asked you before, like I say, and like I found out tonight, none of you have any golf experience. And that's a big part of your recreation program. And I wanted to tell you that you've got a good group running that golf program now. The condition of that main course this weekend would compete with any country club in the valley. The people are very polite that run it. The one suggestion I would make that I'm concerned about is they don't have enough people that they can have rangers. And that nine-hole course is where I taught my sons to play golf. That's where Joe taught Mary to play golf at age 48, or he thought he was. And it's a very nice situation now, and I'm proud of it. And we just want to don't mess with something that ain't broke, as it has been for a while. But the fairway, all the grounds are in good shape, the people are very polite, and you've got a good operation, and we should make money on it. And if we're not, then I'll work as a free consultant, okay? Provided that Mr. Callahan can't interfere.
He'll try.
So the bottom line is, when I have something I'm angry about, I verbalize that. When there's something that's good, I'm going to verbalize that too. And I have seen that golf course change dramatically in the last decade. And God bless. And you just take good care of Larry and Paul, and we'll have a good golf course forever and a good golf program. And as you can see from the equipment in front of me, I just brought it to show how much things have changed. And this is my driver today, and I won't even bring the one out of this bag. It's about half the size. When I started to play golf, I putted with this flat blade putter here. Now, I couldn't give it to a six-year-old, it's too light. But at any rate, I'm very proud of what they've done at that golf course. I know a lot of you don't know anything about it, but it's important. The only problem you have is you don't have a ranger. And I asked how many staff they had over there, and they only have six, and that's the lowest amount on any golf course that I've talked to in the Lehigh Valley. And I saw something in the last two times I played golf that upset me, which is why I'm taking your time. Because they have no ranger, and no sign indicating otherwise, this little 10-year-old girl was driving the golf cart down the fourth fairway, which if any of you are ever familiar with that nine-hole course, that fourth fairway, you could sled on and get a good head of steam going down. And you can't have 10-year-old girls or boys driving a golf cart. And I said something to the man in the golf shop, and I knew the answer. He said, sir, he said, if I were to go out and try to do something about that, he said, I'd have to lock this place all up. And a ranger is not something that's a high expense product for the course. And it's going to keep you out of lawsuits and things that are not good financially or societal, if you will. But they've done a great job, and I don't know whether they don't ask for the money to get a ranger, but you've got to have that nine-hole course. Is where I taught my two boys to play golf, where, you know, Joe, who's 45 years old, is trying to teach Mary, his wife, how to play golf. She's 52. It's a learning experience. And those people don't know the etiquette of the game. They don't know the rules of the game. And so even though it's a nine-hole course, it's not a hard course, it's just a good place to learn the game. You can't have children driving golf carts down a hill ever, because they're going to make a 90-degree turn at some point in time. They're going to get part of the body under that cart, and you're going to have a six-figure lawsuit. So that's just the old man, you know, cautioning you about the whole situation. But other than that, I can't say enough good about the people, and they know that I'm right, but they just don't have the time to do anything about it. Have a good evening. You too, Callahan.
Thank you. I'm still waiting for my new set of balls.
I could say something now, but I don't. I'll tell you from experience, don't keep waiting.
Thank you, Mr. Choi.
Is there anyone else who'd like to make a comment on any resolution or ordinance to be voted on this evening? Moving around the room here. We'll get over there, Colonel. We like things in order, as I'm sure you do too. Is there anyone in the center who'd like to make a comment? Mr. Shire?
Bill Shire, 1898 Avenue. One of the features of Medicare that should perhaps be emphasized more is what they do to the initial price. A couple years back, I had a kidney stone removed. It was an outpatient procedure, rather simple. The bill came $37,000. But next column, Medicare approves $800. Right then and there, the price dropped $36,200. This is a very important thing that Medicare does. And this doctor was independent at the time, but he's now part of the St. Luke's empire. But why they do this, I really don't understand. I'm going to try to read some more about it. There's an excellent book, by the way, by a professor recently deceased, Uwe Reinhardt, which has been praised as the definitive account of the American healthcare system. And I do want to learn more about it, but I can't figure out why they come up with these outrageous numbers. And of course, the people who don't have insurance get stuck with it. Or if they have an insurance company that, you know, has an agreement that they can knock down the price, patient gets stuck with it. A couple of years back on a late night talk show, there was a comic who started off by saying, "I'm from Canada, I guess you can tell." And there was a chuckle in the audience because there's no way of telling. He says, "We look like a lot like Americans." He said, "Think of me as an unarmed American with a health plan."
Is there anyone else in the center who'd like to make a comment? Moving to this side of the room. Yes. Whoever gets up there first, go ahead.
My name is Ellen Buck. I live at 1221 Sidersville Road, Bethlehem. I'm not with any group, but I came with friends to hear, learn more. And I want to say all my friends are happy when they qualify through age for Medicare. And even though we have supplemental things, Medicare for All might not need that anymore. But I would be happy if everybody had Medicare. Thank you.
Thank you. You're on deck, if you will. Thank you.
I'm Phyla Bach. I live at 30 Pine Street in Kutztown, but I'm the volunteer organizer for Lehigh Valley Medicare for All. Our group works to educate people and build public support for Medicare for All in the Lehigh Valley. We've been growing for nearly 3 years and now have a list of over 800 supporters, many of whom are Bethlehem residents. We've conducted over 50 screenings of the Fix-It and Big Pharma documentaries for clubs, churches, colleges, public and home audiences, as well as several tabling activities. In Bethlehem, we have held multiple events at the Unitarian Church and Moravian College. Screenings in Bethlehem have also been hosted by Lehigh Valley for All, Metropolitan Community Church of the Lehigh Valley, Community Action Committee of the Lehigh Valley, and Lehigh University. Approximately 1,000 people have attended these. In addition, about 2,000 people have attended our screenings, Congressional Candidates Forum, and other programs in valley locations beyond Bethlehem. Very many Bethlehem residents have come to these. In fact, our greatest concentration of Medicare for All supporters is here in Bethlehem. So speaking for them, as well as for all of our supporters in the Lehigh Valley, we urge the council to approve the Medicare for All resolution.
Thank you.
Chris Bartleson, 520 East Laurel Street. Obviously, I'm here in support of the co-op, especially for its community building and environmental benefits. When my husband and I were planning our vacation last summer, besides having friends in Greensboro, North Carolina, and Asheville, North Carolina, we wanted to visit as many co-ops as we could. So we stopped in Roanoke, Virginia, Greensboro, North Carolina, to visit Deep Roots, and Asheville, North Carolina, to visit the French Broad River co-op. While this wasn't my first time visiting these co-ops, I actually lived in Greensboro for 12 years and had gone to Deep Roots, I visited this time with new eyes as being a member of a startup co-op. I went in, introduced myself, and got so much support. There is so much support in co-ops for other co-ops. It's pretty astounding, actually. It's obvious that these co-ops are an integral part of their community. They're a hub. You don't have to be a member to go in. Anybody can go into a co-op and benefit from the wonderful food. We all know that Bethlehem is a great place to live. We're on many top 20 lists as being one of the most desirable places to visit and live. A co-op is a destination, and it is part of the fabric of the city. We want to bring local food to support the local economy and to make a healthy community. Thank you for supporting the co-op.
Thank you. Is there anyone else in the room who would like to make a comment on any resolution or ordinance to be voted on this evening? Mr. McGee.
Thank you, John McGeehan, 375 13th Avenue, Bethlehem. As you know, I came here to talk about weeds and signs and a couple other things, but I'm very happy as far as this Medicare for All. But my concern is how we are going to pay for it. My son and I are small business people. We have about 60 people working for us, and we pay their insurance, and we take pretty good care of them. I'm hoping that the 150 million people that have their insurance being picked up by other people and the other 150 million people that may have a different problem. I'm sure you have a very good answer to this, sir. But it's going to be a big check, and I hope you pass this Medicare for All. I'm sure you'll know where the money's coming from, and the people of the United States are going to write this check. But we're going to have to give up something to do it. So remember that. Remember that, okay? There's 150 that don't have it. There's 150 are paying. And what happens to the mayor when he's got 3,200 people here, he's paying for his insurance? Is he done? We don't have to do that anymore. The Medicare for All will pick up the VIG. It's tough. This is tough. I know where you're going. And I want that soldier right there, that kid, Mr. Union Man, I want you to, you know, my heart's out to you.
Mr. McGee, if you could address your comments to council, please.
My comment is to you. If anything I can do for you, soldier, I will. I think, am I clear? Thank you, counsel.
Sir, you already had your comments, if you will. Is there anyone else who'd like to make a comment who hasn't spoken? Yes, Ms. Marsh.
Colleen Marsh. And to start, I'd like to thank all of those involved in the CDBG process on the administration and on council, as well as all the organizations who serve our community through programs such as those supported by this funding. I've lived in downtown Bethlehem since 2004, not having a car for several years, and still frequently walk as a primary mode of transportation. I work at Meridian College, and have been involved in the co-op in varying capacities since 2011. Wanted to address a couple of the questions that have been raised in discourse about the funding source for the co-op in this case. To start, the Bethlehem Food Co-op is incorporated as a nonprofit cooperative corporation, organized under the Cooperative Corporation Law of 1988, and it meets the eligibility criteria for the CDBG program. At least 22 food co-ops across the country have received local subsidies, including CDBG funds, tax incentives, and community revitalization grants. That's just between 2011 and 2016. The Bethlehem Food Co-op is poised to grow from the already thriving organization it is today into a pillar of our community, engaging, empowering, and supporting neighbors from all walks of life. From a practical perspective, the co-op is a grocery store. It's owned by its members, but it's open to the public. And even left simply at that, it will provide a valuable resource for our community, which currently grapples with low access to fresh food and basic groceries at accessible prices. The USDA Food Access Research Site provides a multi-layer look at food access across the U.S., demonstrating that most of downtown Bethlehem is both low income and located at least a half a mile from a supermarket. North Bethlehem, defined as north of the Lehigh River, east of the Monocacy Creek, south of Elizabeth Avenue, and west of Linden Street, which overlaps with the Northside 2027 initiative pretty solidly, is a low-income census tract where 21% or 683 households do not have access to a vehicle. This fact puts families in the position of shopping at gas stations and convenience stores, paying higher prices and sourcing groceries that lack choice and nutritional value. The co-op plans to employ a number of strategies to help make healthy food options economically accessible for our community, including accepting SNAP and WIC benefits, having a basics program for staple goods, and a comprehensive bulk bin section so that shoppers can purchase just what they need. There are a few additional points I'd like to highlight about how the co-op will benefit the Bethlehem community, specifically the quality of life for low and moderate income households, as is the goal for this program. First, co-ops are job creators. According to the Healthy Foods and Healthy Communities report issued by the National Cooperative Grocers Association, cooperatives pay above average for their sector, $14.31 per hour versus $13.35 per hour, and are able to pay a larger share of their health insurance premiums. So here's that lovely merging of topics tonight again. The Bethlehem Food Co-op projects bringing 21 jobs to downtown Bethlehem at opening, and that could grow to 33 jobs by year five. Second, physical health. Having access to fresh, healthy food will improve the quality of life and health for some local residents who currently can't access it. We realize access doesn't solve the whole problem, though, and that's why part of the co-op's mission is education, informing people about where their food is coming from, various dietary needs, cooking methods, being culturally sensitive in the items that are being prepared and sold in the store, and getting our youth involved. Programs like the ones we plan to offer and have already begun offering have made large impacts on their community. Finally, community empowerment. Through ownership, members have a voice in the business. They can serve on committees, vote on important issues at the annual membership meeting, or run for the board. While ownership requires economic participation, our co-op has already established programs to help with scholarships and payment plans. That empowerment is contagious, and co-op members will be more likely to be civically engaged, volunteer, and take on other causes. In the bigger picture, the co-op is much more than a grocery store. By definition, a co-op is an autonomous association of persons united voluntarily to meet their common economic, social, and cultural needs and aspirations through a jointly owned enterprise. The Bethlehem Food Co-op's mission specifically encourages social, physical, and economic health through a number of ends, and educational opportunities. In my understanding of CDBG, the cooperative definition and the Bethlehem Food Co-op mission echo the program goal of developing viable urban communities by providing decent housing and a suitable living environment, and by expanding economic opportunities principally for low and moderate income persons. So I appreciate your time and consideration of the Bethlehem Food Co-op as part of that upcoming allocation.
Thank you. Is there anyone else who hasn't spoken yet on any subject to be voted on this evening who'd like to make comment?
But get me out of here.
You're free to go, sir.
Thank you.
Moving on with our agenda. Communications. Communication 6A.
A memorandum from Mark Sivak, Director of Budget and Finance, stating the financial requirements and minimum municipal contributions in connection with the city's pension plans for 2020 budgeting purposes and pursuant to Act 205 of the Pension Reform Law.
This is for information purposes only. Communication 6B.
A memorandum from Sandra Steidel, Director of Purchasing, with an attached list of items that will be placed for sale in an online auction to be held within the next 60 days.
If council has no objection to the property listed, the same may be added to the online auction. If council would like to discuss any specific item, the same shall be removed from the list and discussed at the next council meeting on November 19th. Would any member of council like to discuss a specific item or have it removed from the list and discussed at the next city council meeting on the 19th? If not, a memo will be sent to purchasing director that the city council has no objection to the property listed. Communication 6C.
A memorandum from Edward Boscola, Director in Water and Sewer Resources, requesting City Council to adopt a resolution in support of an application to the Pennsylvania Department of Community and Economic Development for a Pennsylvania Small Water and Sewer Project grant to fund a project to extend a water main and waste services to East Allen Gardens residential community.
Resolution 10B is on the agenda. Communication 6D.
A memorandum from Darlene Heller, Director of Planning and Zoning, requesting authorization to submit a grant application for a PennDOT multimodal grant in connection with prioritized pedestrian safety improvements in the Northside 2027 neighborhood study.
Resolution 10C is on the agenda. Communication 6E.
A memorandum from Michael Alcohol, Director of Public Works, recommending a contract with Good Plumbing Heating Air Conditioning, Inc., related to design services for Americans with Disability Act upgrades to three public bathroom facilities at Monocacy Park, Yasco Pool, and Clearpool Pool. The designs are to be completed by September 31st, 2019. The fee for the contract is $5,450, and there are no renewals.
Resolution 10E is on the agenda. Communication 6F.
Memorandum from Edward Boscola, Director of Water and Sewer Resources, recommending a contract with Brendan Stanton, Inc., TA BSI Electrical Contractors for electrical construction related to wastewater treatment plant, bar screen, and detritor replacement. The term of the contract runs 390 days from the notice to proceed. The fee for the contract is $248,525. There are no renewals.
Resolution 10F is on the agenda. Communication 6G.
A memorandum from Edward Boscola, Director of Water and Sewer Resources, recommending a contract with LB Industries, Inc., for general contracting services related to wastewater treatment plant, bar screen, and detritor replacement work. The term of the contract runs 390 days from the notice to proceed. The fee for the contract is $1,298,456. There are no renewals.
Resolution 10G is on the agenda. Communication 6H.
A memorandum from Edward Boscola, Director of Water and Sewer Resources, recommending a contract with Tri-County Mechanical, Inc. for ventilation construction services related to the wastewater treatment plant, bar screen, and detritor replacement work. The term of the contract runs 390 days from the notice to proceed. The fee is $384,000, and there are no renewals.
Resolution 10H is on the agenda. Communication 6I.
A memorandum from Alicia Carner, Director of Community and Economic Development, recommending a contract with Urban Research and Development Corporation for the South Bethlehem Planning Study. The estimated completion date is March 31st, 2020. The cost for the contract is $25,000, and there are no renewals.
Resolution 10I is on the agenda. Communication 6J.
A memorandum from Eric Evans, business administrator, with proposed ordinance amending Article 107, titled Departments. The amendments update Article 107 to accurately reflect the city's current organizational structure.
The ordinance will be placed on the November 19th agenda for first reading. Communication 6K.
A memorandum from City Solicitor William Leeson with an attached resolution and associated use permit agreement. The permittee is Greater Lehigh Valley Chamber of Commerce buying through its Downtown Bethlehem Association. The event is Clash of the Carols. The agreement covers December 7th, 14th, 20th, and 21st. The location is Nevin Place, adjacent to the Sunning Courtyard.
Resolution 10K is on the agenda. Communication 6L.
A memorandum from City Solicitor William Leeson with an attached resolution and associated use permit agreement. The permittee is Greater Lehigh Valley Chamber of Commerce buying through its Downtown Bethlehem Business Association. The event is Christmas City Village. The agreement covers November 22nd, 23rd, 24th, 29th, and 30th, and December 1st, 6th, 7th, 8th, 13th, 14th, 15th, 20th, 21st, and 22nd. The location is the 400 block of Main Street.
Resolution 10L is on the agenda. Reports this evening. I have one report. Council met at the beginning of this evening for a committee of the whole meeting at 6 p.m. where the administration presented the proposed 2020 to 2024 capital improvement program. The meeting was for information purposes only. Mr. Mayor?
Thank you, Mr. President. 2 points. This Friday, I'll be announcing the budget for 2020. I believe that members of council have received an invitation. And then next Tuesday for our first budget hearing, I will read the speech too, for to get it on the record. Second, we have a logo out in front of us here. A few weeks ago, I challenged Freedom High School's web design classes to create a logo that could be used on the city's website and census. On all city census information materials. Dozens of designs were submitted for consideration, and the winning logo was created by Freedom High sophomore Aiden Sweater. And as we move into 2020 with our other cities, especially Easton and Allentown, this logo will be used across the city on all literature, and hopefully, I know Ms. Negron's been involved in this too, that the city will have an accurate count come 2020 in April. So that's my report. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Dr. Bimmer?
The Community Development Committee met on Monday, October 28th at 6 p.m. in Town Hall. The members of the committee unanimously recommended that City Council adopt the appropriate resolution at tonight's City Council meeting for the 2020 CDBG and home programs.
Thank you. Ordinances for final passage this evening, Ordinance 8A.
An ordinance amending Part 13 of the Codified Ordinances of the City of Bethlehem, Pennsylvania, as amended, known as the Zoning Ordinance of the City of Bethlehem, by amending the city zoning map. Bill 39, 2019, is sponsored by Ms. Negron and Mr. Reynolds.
Discussion? Clerk, please call the roll.
Ms. Negron?
Aye.
Mr. Reynolds?
Aye.
Dr. Van Wert?
Aye.
Mr. Callahan?
Aye.
Mr. Colon?
Aye.
Ms. Cramson-Smith?
Aye.
Mr. Waldron?
Aye. It passes 7-0. New ordinances for consideration this evening, Ordinance 9A.
An ordinance amending Article 531 to increase the amount of fines for parking violations. Bill 40, 2019, is sponsored by Mr. Colon and Mr. Callahan.
Discussion? Ms. Negron?
Thank you, President Waldron. I just want to make a statement. We have talked about this at the committee, Public Safety Committee before, and it was pulled from the committee and brought back to the table, and I just wanted to put it in the records that my statement, I agree that the parking fines should be increased because it doesn't make sense in terms of how much you're paying versus how much you pay as a penalty. However, I think that and according to what's presented from the parking authority, is going the amount of money that people are paying hourly increase this year, and it's going to keep on increasing, and I think that's a big burden for the people, especially with the downtowns, and most greatly in the south side. I mean, we heard the business people that were here concerned about the providing and the cost for the south side individuals that are visiting their cancer center. And you know, again, I just wish that we can stop. I feel this is a snowball that has been created, that it is not stopping. So I am going to vote against this because, again, I believe that something needs to be worked out between the administration and the parking authority so that the keeping of increasing of the hourly rate stops in order for this to make sense. Thank you, President Water.
Mr. Callahan?
Thank you, Mr. President. I as a liaison department authority, I have a little different view. Councilwoman Negron and Van Wert are in favor of the study for the free parking. I'm also in favor of free parking, but obviously not in our main street where parking is at a premium. And I mean, I was just down there for lunch today, and I live right down Main Street. There's never any parking on Main Street. I just think, you know, for us to give out free parking there is, it's ridiculous. We do have free parking. Mr. Livingston, isn't there free parking, I think, on North Street for 2 hours? Could you, Mr. Hoffmeyer, walk in, please? I don't know if we have a way of, through social media, whatever, or through the press, but just letting people know that there is free parking. It's a block and a half away, from the downtown, but there is free parking for 2 hours already on North Street, and that's been there for how long?
I'm not sure off the top of my head, but...
But since you've been there, right?
Yeah, of course. Yeah,
so, and if we are going to give out free parking, I would suggest that if we're going to do it, we have a number of meters that are on Broad Street. Once you're going up Broad Street, probably past 3rd and 4th Street, they probably lighten up a little bit there, as far as availability. But giving out free parking on Main Street, I just think that the Central Business District down there and the business owners, they want to have people rolling in those meters being rolled over every half hour to an hour. It's the goal's not to have people park there all day long. So again, I'm all for the free parking, as long as it's in areas where we have the availability, and obviously people would have to walk a couple blocks, but I don't think that would be a problem if there's free parking that goes along with it. So thank you.
Dr. Benner?
I think my views on this are pretty well known, and I just want to echo what Councilwoman Negron said, particularly in terms of the word snowballing, as well as the disproportionate impact of raising parking fines and parking fees on our Southside businesses. So I will not be supporting this measure tonight. Thank you.
Mr. Gramsci-Smith?
Just two things. I'm going to support the increase in fines because I think most of my constituents, if not all that I spoke to, agree that it needs to happen. I also have to note that I've had at least one phone call from someone who said they felt that some of the fines need to be increased even further. One woman complained about people parking constantly in front of the fire hydrant in her neighborhood, which she felt was like a real safety hazard. And I did speak to the police chief and the police fire chief regarding that. But also, I just discovered recently from a downtown merchant that there is going to be free parking during the Christmas holidays. It's going to be subsidized slightly from Lehigh Valley Health Network. Can you comment on that, Mr. Livingston?
We're currently still discussing it with, but we are discussing an option of them in a marketing campaign sponsoring free parking throughout the city, both north and south side.
And what time frame would that be? And would it be hourly? And then what time frame are you looking at? Like every Saturday during the Christmas holiday? Or?
Currently, they're looking at 4 Saturdays gearing up to Christmas. Again, the exact dates have not been identified yet.
And I guess, I know we talked about some people would like to study, and I'm thinking it's only going to be 4 Saturdays, so it wouldn't give us enough data, but would that give us some data as far as, the success of free parking?
I don't think there's time to prepare to actually get data from that, and outline it and what the success would be. I think it would provide some ticketing data on how many people didn't move, but I'm not sure, outside of that, how much data it would provide.
It'd be hard to judge because the fine would still be at $10 right now. The idea that free parking would be the check to take it up to around $30. So you'd have to figure out what is your measure of success. What if you did the park study, what does it mean successful? Are we driving more people to the downtowns? Well, if that's the case, based on parking and our studies, we show that there's already plenty of people downtown because we're at capacity or near capacity with parking. So if our downtown is hurting, it's not being reflected in parking. Parking is essentially at capacity. So to say that we should give way for parking really isn't going to. I don't know what are you going to. What's our successful study going to look like?
And I guess one of the variables that could skew the study, if we look at just that month of free parking, is that it's the holiday time, and we've got a lot of positive publicity nationwide as to being one of the best cities to come to for Christmas. So, you know, I think we're probably going to have an increase in parking anyway, an increase in people coming downtown. So
parking demand moves up in the city.
Thank you.
Mr. Reynolds?
Yeah, just a couple of quick comments here. One of the things that came up was the idea that if we didn't vote for the fines and the idea of free parking, this is not a situation of fines or no fines, because even the potential for a pilot program would call for even higher fines. So it's really about how high the fines need to be. And I think that some of this conversation has been like higher fines versus free parking, and it's really like higher fines from $10 to $15 versus free parking and then much higher fines, which I understand the rationale, as I've said every time from the beginning in this, is that this is a complicated situation, and any change, and we saw this, and I believe Ms. Satullo had written an article the other day about this, any change to the parking structure of downtown and our garages affects our business, affects our businesses differently. There were several businesses in there that brought up different ideas. So the one thing I think I do understand, and I express support for looking into Dr. Van Wert's idea, as I still do, and there's always the possibility to look at these things, but there's got to be a collaboration, and there's got to be people coming together. And a lot of times you can study these things 6, 7, 8, 9 months, and there's no clear answer because different businesses want different things. So going forward, I think the one thing that does need to, if anything's going to happen here, is the continued kind of communication between the different ideas. And you saw a lot of different business owners talk about, how about this, how about this, this is what I think, and I understand you guys have to balance those needs out. But the process about doing some type of pilot program as a kind of replacement for the fine increase from $10 to $15 is just not really feasible, as far as to be able to, how long it will take. We'd have to change the ordinance about the fines. We'd have to decide what success looks like. And over the long term, 100% I'm on board. And I've said that from the beginning, is that we can study it, but it's a long, complicated conversation. And I think it's a conversation that the real test about whether or not we are willing to go down that path and going down that road, no pun intended, is whether or not, you know, people are able to continue to meet and talk and have this collaboration and come forward with some type of uniform idea. Thank you, Mr. Waldron.
Thank you. Obviously, this is a complicated, nuanced conversation with a lot of moving parts. Trying to get the right balance is probably not going to be achievable, but we still have to try to make that feel as fair as possible to as many people as possible. I don't know, Mr. Livingston, you know off the top of your head, what your ticket rate increase was since the hourly rate increase to now, kind of in that window? Because I know we had talked about something tripling or quadrupling the amount.
I'm not sure off the top of my head. Okay. Just the 2014 to 18, didn't do that. But I'm not sure about what it did in this year.
Sure.
We would need all this year's data to actually tell you and compare to past years. We sent the data for the first 6 months because that was the only definable time frame that we felt comfortable sending.
Yeah, I mean, ultimately it comes down to the fact that the one thing that is a losing situation for everyone is more tickets. The parking authority doesn't want to do that because it costs them more money in enforcement. The merchants don't want that because it turns people away, and obviously the users don't want that because it deters them from coming downtown. So the way to do that is by making the hourly rate more in line with what the fine is for violation, in order to try to check that level back to compliance, which is ultimately what the fine is to do. It is not in order to create revenue for the parking authority. It is to create higher levels of compliance so that less tickets are issued, so that there's more turnover, so that people can find a spot. So I understand that, and that's why I'd be supporting this rate, the fine increase from 10 to 15. Simultaneously, I like some of the conversation that's been started by Dr. Van Wert
about the idea of maybe thinking a little outside the box, flipping it 180 and seeing what would be the outcomes of free parking with a much higher rate increase. Ultimately, we don't really know until we do that, but to do that is a complicated thing. It's not as simple as snapping your fingers and making it happen. It's going to be very tricky to find out what that balance is, what the parameters of the timing, the location, in fairness to all the users, which as best we can do, include all the folks who have a stake in this. And I think that the Parking Authority has already started that conversation. We got a memo from you, Mr. Livingston, asking us what council would be looking for in that parking study, what some of the specific outlines and questions that we'd be looking to ask and have answered in the study. And then ultimately, something that we hadn't even talked about before is, where does that money come from? Those studies are expensive. And is it appropriate for city taxpayers to be funding a parking study for free parking or not? That's a question I don't know the answer to right now, but it is something that will need to be answered if we pursue a parking study, which I think that conversation will be a long one, and I think that if we're able to work with the Parking Authority Board, City Council Administration, as well as the merchants, and everybody can get in the same room and talk about some of the challenges and what some of the solutions might be, I think that would be a good starting point. But I do think that that stands alone from the necessity for this small increase from 10 to 15, which I think is long overdue, because I think it will help bring compliance back into order where it should be. So I will be supporting this increase tonight. Is there any other members of council? Mr. Reynolds?
Just quickly, and we said this last time, Mr. Livingston, we need less tickets. Bethlehem needs less tickets. We need to change whatever we need to do. You've talked about how the amount of tickets has gone up. You know that. We all know that. The citizens don't know that. People hate getting parking tickets. And we need to continue to look at what we can do to tweak the system to drive down the amount of parking tickets that people are getting.
Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Holdren.
Mr. Callahan?
I would also suggest that, Mr. Livingston, if you have available to you in the next couple weeks, I know that you had sent a couple studies to council on some of the variable rate parking and also on free parking. If you could forward those again to council, and I don't know, if, Dr. Benward, I think you said last meeting you had some studies too. If you could forward those studies to, you know, to all of us.
I did not say that. Sorry.
I thought you said it was well documented and that there were studies already done on it.
No.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No, I said I've looked into some cities, but that's my own research.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So if you could forward any studies that you have, I think it's also important to know that we have a very vibrant downtown. We're not hurting for people downtown. I mean, it's a very busy, vibrant place to be. There's one of the reasons why Allentown was giving out free parking, and it wasn't free. And if I'm wrong on the number, let me know. But they're struggling to get people downtown, and that's why they were giving out free parking. But the parking was being paid for by Center City, right?
Developers. Yeah, two-thirds yeah. of the anticipated loss was being filled in by
from Mr. Riley, right?
City Center.
Yeah, City Center. Yes. At the tune of what, like $120,000 it was?
I think what I remember was the Parking Authority assumed this would be about $110,000 cost, and I think City Center picked up about $66,000.
Thank you.
Are there any other comments from members of council? Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you.
The clerk would please call the roll.
Ms. Negron?
Nay.
Mr. Reynolds?
Aye.
Dr. Van Wert?
Nay.
Mr. Callahan?
Aye.
Mr. Cologne?
Aye.
Ms. Cramsey-Smith?
Aye.
Mr. Walder?
Aye. Passes 5-2. Ordinance 9B.
An ordinance of the City of Bethlehem, Counties of Lehigh, Northampton, Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, amending Article 156 of the Codified Ordinances of the City of Bethlehem, titled Bethlehem Pension Fund, Bill 41-2019, is sponsored by Mr. Cologne and Dr. Van Wert.
Discussion? Please call the roll.
Ms. Negron?
Aye.
Mr. Reynolds?
Aye.
Dr. Van Wert?
Aye.
Mr. Callahan?
Aye.
Mr. Cologne?
Aye.
Ms. Cramsey-Smith?
Aye.
Mr. Walter?
Aye. Passes 7-0. Ordinance 9C.
An ordinance of the City of Bethlehem, Counties of Lehigh, Northampton, Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, amending Article 927 of the City of Bethlehem Codified Ordinances, titled Sewer Rental, Bill 42-2019, is sponsored by Mr. Colon and Mr. Callahan.
Discussion? The clerk, please call the roll.
Ms. Negron?
Aye.
Mr. Reynolds?
Aye.
Dr. Van Wert?
Aye.
Mr. Callahan?
Aye.
Mr. Colon?
Aye.
Ms. Gramsci-Smith?
Aye.
Mr. Walden?
Aye. Passes 7-0. Ordinance 9D.
An ordinance of the City of Bethlehem, Counties of Lehigh, Northampton, Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, authorizing an intermunicipal agreement between the City of Bethlehem and the Lehigh Township Municipal Authority related to water services to be provided at a resale master water meter pit within the city's franchise service territory. Bill 43-2019 is sponsored by Mr. Colon and Dr. Van Wert.
Discussion? Clerk, please call the roll.
Ms. Negron?
Aye.
Mr. Reynolds?
Aye.
Dr. Van Wert?
Aye.
Mr. Callahan?
Aye.
Mr. Colon?
Aye.
Ms. Gramsci-Smith?
Aye.
Mr. Walder?
Aye. Passes 7-0. Resolutions. Resolution 10A.
Be it resolved by the City Council of the City of Bethlehem that the City Council supports the Medicare for All Act of 2019 and calls on our federal legislators to work toward its enactment, providing appropriate and efficient health care for all residents of the United States, including the City of Bethlehem. The resolution is sponsored by Mr. Reynolds and Mr. Colon.
Mr. Reynolds?
Thank you. First of all, I want to start by thanking everybody for coming out today. Oftentimes, when we have a full room here, or people are this passionate about this issue as well as the co-op, which there's a lot of overlap with, it's because they're trying to necessarily vote against something. And what this is about coming out and being part of the solution, being positive. And this is also, I think, for everybody about education. It's not about how quick it can happen. It's not about the national politics of it. It's about the future of healthcare and where we're going to be in 5, 10, or 20 years. And I wouldn't be bringing this up now if the mayor wasn't ready to release his budget in, I guess, a little less than 2 days now,
Friday
morning. Over my time in council, I've tried to increase awareness and attention to the cost drivers in the city budget, and healthcare is one of them. And if you look at the city budget in 2005, 2006, we had like 670 employees. Now we're down to like 600 employees, and yet our healthcare costs have doubled. And that $5-6 million increase every year, every dollar there that the taxpayers are paying for healthcare for our city employees is a dollar that can't be spent on public safety, it can't be spent on community development, it can't be spent on our city and the priorities that we have. That doesn't include employee costs that have risen as far as premiums and deductibles are concerned. Last year, and it depends where you look in the state of Pennsylvania because it's different by region, but a couple numbers are, is like the average cost for healthcare for a family of four is $20,000, with another $6,000 coming out of pocket. Those numbers, we don't always see those numbers. We actually rarely see those numbers because that money is coming from a combination of employers, taxpayers, citizens, and also people just don't want to tell that story. Like, my full-time job, as many of you guys know, is I teach over at Allen High School. And like those kids sometimes, and I'm probably the last person that you think a 17-year-old would want to tell their healthcare story to, but those numbers are real and the stories are real. And everybody that showed up tonight to tell their story deserves credit, because it's not easy to get up there and talk about what you don't have in your life. And we've all been in a situation where it's easy, really easy for people to look at us and not say anything, but you're thinking something as far as like either not having sympathy or not having empathy. And like, people don't want to tell these stories, but they're true. And if you've looked at the last 10 years, and you look at the Affordable Care Act, and the Affordable Care Act has done wonderful things. It expanded coverage to over 20 million people. It covered people with pre-existing conditions. People are able to stay on their health insurance longer, but it has not reduced the cost of our healthcare system dramatically. Premiums have been driven up for a lot of people. Why? Because insurance companies are being forced now to cover people that beforehand they would never want to cover. They wouldn't want to cover those people beforehand because they weren't people that they were going to make money off of. Last year, and I'll give you some numbers, is last year healthcare in the United States cost about $3.65 trillion. A year earlier, it cost about $3.5 trillion. with baby boomers retiring, these numbers are all from the Center for Medicaid and Medicare Services. When you look at what's going to happen with health care in the next 5, 6, 7 years, that cost is going to go from $3.8 trillion to $6 trillion. And that money's not falling out of the sky. And the question about who's going to pay for it is like the same people that are paying for it now. And that's who's going to pay for it. And that $6 trillion is going to be paid for, and this doesn't even include the states that haven't even decided to expand Medicaid yet. And when you look at what's going on here, the only two real questions that we have here is going to be, how do you drive down costs, and who's going to pay the $6 trillion bill? And who's going to pay it? If nothing changes, it's going to be us. The taxpayer is going to keep paying, whether or not it's me, who teaches in a school district downtown, whether or not it's cities, whether or not it's counties, whether or not it's federal government, whether or not it's Medicaid. So who's going to pay that $6 trillion bill? And I understand a few people, and I didn't call anybody in city council, I didn't call the mayor, because I wanted people to bring their own opinions to this. And I'm sure there's skepticism, I'm sure there's thought about, you know, why are we doing this? This doesn't have a chance to pass and things like that. But some of what this is about, it's about having the courage to talk about the change that needs to occur and show the people at the federal level that we support having a conversation. And I understand, trust me, I understand the value of practical change and practical plans. When I released Bethlehem 2017 a couple years ago, and we were looking at climate action and Northside 2027 and neighborhood opportunities and innovation and transparency and accountability and ending the digital divide, I spent a long time, and I still do, thinking about how do we build up organic structures? How do we create actual solutions to this plan? And that's all about creating lasting, meaningful change. But some issues, you don't get to be the drivers of change. Some issues, you are just a voice. You are a voice that is bringing awareness to an issue and education to an issue. This resolution is not about answering every question about how these programs are going to work. It can't be, and it shouldn't be. And there are also several other current ways out there that people talk about. National candidates for president talk about this. Congresswoman Susan Wild talks about this, about things that have a much better chance of passing. And if those come along, absolutely, as incremental steps, we need to take those, whether or not it's public option, lowering the Medicare age, national negotiation of prescription drugs, whatever it might be. Those are all individual good steps. But at the same time, like, that's not what is going to drive down the cost of healthcare, and that's not what is going to continue to eat into the percentage of our GDP that is being taken up by healthcare. And like I said, it is a legitimate question about who is going to pay for Medicare for All. It's an even better question about who's going to pay for our healthcare if we don't do something, and if we don't pass something. And passing this resolution does not make it less likely, and we can't continue to say people aren't ready for a conversation. If I told you that over the next 10 years, the federal government is going to spend $25 trillion on healthcare, you'd be like, wow, that's a lot. That's also what they're going to currently spend between Medicaid and Medicare. And when you look at local municipalities and school districts and everything else, that's what the government is always already going to spend. Okay? So I would just finish up by saying is like, this is a vote about understanding the magnitude of the issue. It's a vote about showing the courage, about where we're going to go. So one of the speakers talked before about how Congresswoman Wild is signed on to this bill in Washington, and she talks about it a lot, about how like we need to have these conversations, and people didn't send her to Washington to have the conversation or be scared of having a conversation. And you know, I don't think that this is something that we should necessarily be scared about as well. So I would just hope that my colleagues would consider supporting the resolution that I brought forward. It's about showing, you know, not just our leaders in Washington, but also our community about, you know, what we think meaningful change is going to look like. It's about who we are as a city, it's about who we want to be, and it's about how we want to serve the citizens of Bethlehem, and how, like I said, we can't always create the change. Sometimes we just need to be another voice that says we are ready for the conversation and we are ready to support whatever you need to do in Washington. And with that being said, I would certainly open it up for any questions that any of my colleagues might have about the resolution. Thank you, Mr. Baldwin.
Thank you. Mr. Clark?
Thank you, President Waldron. I don't have any questions for Mr. Reynolds, but just want to make a quick comment. So my full-time job is I work in healthcare. I manage the admissions department for a very large local nursing home. So I see Medicare every day, work with it every day. Medicare Advantage plans, commercial insurance, private insurance, and every day see come across my desk referrals from individuals, many of whom are just not currently Medicare eligible due to age, but are working folks, no different than a lot of the people in this room, a lot of the people in our families who have some sort of coverage from their employer, but don't have any benefit for the rehabilitation that they need. And then they're either denied acceptance to most of the local nursing homes and they don't have a lot of options of where to go to get the services that they need, or they're looking at being underserved, or just don't have the coverage that they need, oftentimes through ailments, afflictions, or maladies that are no fault of their own. Someone who was involved in an accident, someone who was had something come upon them that would have happened regardless of what steps they took in their life, that they just had these things come about. So again, I see every single day at my full-time job kind of what the current flaws in our healthcare system is, what people are dealing with, and I know that voting in support of this resolution, which I intend to do tonight, nothing's going to happen quick, nothing's going to be solved tonight, nothing's going to be solved tomorrow, but it will continue the conversation and move it in that direction. So I just like to echo Mr. Reynolds' words about thanking everyone for coming out tonight, and I want to thank Mr. Reynolds for bringing this before us. Thank you.
Mr. Collin?
Thank you, Mr. President. First of all, I want to thank everybody that came out here and spoke tonight, and especially to the gentleman over here. I lost my wife to cancer on August 30th, 2006. She was diagnosed in 2001, March 14th. And over that period of time, we went through literally hundreds of thousands of dollars between operations, doctor visits, going all over the basically going all over the country to find a cure for something that there was no cure for. The end of her life was not pleasant. The TPN that I had to feed her through a tube was basically $10,000 a bag. And I often wondered where my kids would be and I had I not had insurance. So my heart goes out to you, number one. That is why I, when President Obama became president, I fully supported his single payer, which is basically the Medicare for All program that we are looking at. You know, it amazes me that we spent $7 trillion on wars in the last 10 years. We didn't even blink an eye. And everybody's always wondering where we're going to get the money. Where we just spent $7 trillion on wars. Right? We didn't have a war tax. We didn't sell any war bonds. And our economy for the last 8 years of President Obama, the last 3 years with this guy that's in there now, the economy's still going. And we're still spending $7 trillion on all this money. The money's there. You know, healthcare is not... someone had mentioned earlier, they're wondering what the cure to this problem is. You know what the cure is? Get out and vote. Vote people in. I don't care if it's Republican or Democrat. I mean, I wish the Republicans would put something on the table. I mean, they keep talking about it, but they don't. But the cure is to vote for people who support what you believe in. That's the cure. And that's the only way it's going to get done. You can yell all you want, scream all you want until you go vote, get people in who are sympathetic to what we believe in. It's the only way we're going to cure it. And I hate to say it, but until then, nothing's changing. But I feel a huge groundswell, especially since 3 years ago when the yellow man got in, yellow hair guy, right?
I don't think that's appropriate.
No.
I don't think that's appropriate in this council.
Colonel, that's
fine. Somebody say that about the president.
Colonel, you're my friend, but I respectfully disagree. Anyways.
I tell you, on the record, I don't think you should talk about the president of the United States as a yellow-haired guy. And put that in your book.
I will. Anyways, we spent about $6 trillion on wars, and nobody, again, blinked an eye. You know, the cost of health care expenses. If you don't have health care, your only option is to go to the emergency room. That's it. And emergency room visits are maybe Dr. Van Wert can help me with this, at least 10-20 times more expensive than a preventive care going to a doctor. I mean, something as simple as getting an antibiotic from a doctor might cost 50-60 bucks versus that person doesn't get the antibiotic, gets an infection, and then has to go into emergency room. And the person is probably not paying for the services because they don't have the funds. So we're already paying for it. So I don't understand why we don't have this Medicare for All program, a single payer program, whatever you want to call it. But healthcare in this country, it isn't a handout. It's a basic need. It's as basic as breathing in oxygen and drinking water. It's not a handout. It's a need. And with those comments, I will be supporting the sign. I appreciate that. Thank you for coming out tonight. I really appreciate it. Thank you.
Mr. Callahan.
Mr. Smith.
I'll try to be brief, but I just want to give, Hillary mentioned her daughter needing therapies, and I think it's unfortunate because I used to coordinate early intervention services for Lehigh County, and I think that many people aren't aware of those services, and those services are free services. It's an entitlement program paid for by the government that provides free therapies, OT, PT, and medical services for infants and toddlers birthed from 5 years old that have developmental disabilities. So I just want to put that out there so people are aware. I also am totally in favor of health care for all because it is a basic human right. And not to go on too long, but I definitely have seen professionally and personally families and individuals destroyed by lack of health care. My own family, my father had a massive heart attack in his 40s and was out of work for a very long time. And our family of nine didn't even know where food was coming from because he was out of work for so long and my mother could not work. And it was based on the graciousness of the community and neighbors that we were fed and clothed during that time period. So I'm definitely in favor of healthcare for all, but I'm also wondering at the same time that right now there are 9 different healthcare plans being proposed in Congress by different congresswomen and men, and we're not really sure what healthcare for all is going to look like. It's going to depend on who the next president is, who's going to be having control of the Senate and Congress, and I'm just wondering if it would be prudent to consider maybe doing an addendum to the resolution stating that we support Medicare for all or a comparable plan, because there may be a comparable plan that's on the table.
I'll turn to my colleagues to see if they have any thoughts or feedback to what Ms. Cramsey Smith said. I think that's a minor addendum that I don't think would impact the resolution in front of us tonight in any negative way. Off the top of my head, obviously, but I would look to see if anybody else had any feedback on maybe something, why that wouldn't be a positive idea. Mr. Reynolds, you're the kind of driver of this and don't want to hijack your resolution. Or Dr. Van Wert?
Before we get there, could I just wanted to be able to comment as well.
Sure.
For those of you who don't know, I am a physician. I'm an internist. And in training with physicians, there's a lot of patients that stick with you that you just can't forget. And I'm not going to tell you about the ones that stick with me because they're pretty heartbreaking. But 9 times out of 10, it's because they didn't have access to health insurance that they end up in the hospital where I used to be a hospitalist. I'd be the person who'd take care of them when they came into the emergency room and needed to be admitted. And now I'm I work with Michael up at Graysdale, among other places, and take care of half the patients up there. And I would say that most of my patients, to some degree, end up in a nursing home in some part because of their inability to access adequate medical care. for diabetics who cannot afford their insulin, they go without and they get diabetic foot ulcers and they get amputations and they end up living in nursing homes, which are paid for by Medicaid. Or COPD, I would say 50% of my patients who come in either don't buy their inhalers or they ration them and they end up going back into the hospital again and again and again, 10 times in 6 months, because they cannot afford the inhalers at home and there is no way to get it to them. People who cannot afford their blood pressure medicine end up on dialysis, and they end up on Medicare, and we are paying for them to be shipped to dialysis 3 times a week with the misery that comes with dialysis. So I see it firsthand, and I see it more on the micro scale rather than a lot of the macro scale that Willie addressed here. It's real, it's consequential, and it costs so much money. One of the places that most internists train is the VA. And I had the good fortune to train in Washington, D.C.'s VA, which is a very well-run VA. And now some of them have a lot of problems, but this one taught me a lot about the genius, actually, of a closed system. The VA had the best medical record system in the world, the best computer system in the world, and our patients had access to clinics. They had access to care that most of these very poor people who live side by side with them did not have access to. And I see how successful the VA model was, and I believe that even though there are huge hurdles to be had in terms of finding out how to do this, that that's our goal in front of us, is to find out how we can do this. It's not a matter of should we do this, it's a matter of how can we do this, because it is the only thing in my mind that makes financial sense to us as a system, but also humanitarian sense to us as people who care for everyone else. So that's really what I wanted to say. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Dr. Roenberg. Ms. Negron?
Thank you, President Weldon. I want to first start by saying thank you for everybody for being in here, and just my general feedback is this is the easiest resolution we ever had in front of us. It's a no-brainer. But I want to also go back to, you know, and I do what everybody here said. I did that myself and my family, so I know how important it is. Now, because I know this is a national movement, I appreciate the suggestion for an amendment that Councilwoman Smith proposed, but I think that because this is a resolution that we're trying to pass all across the Lehigh Valley, the state, etc., it might be a question for actually them that are organizing the movement. I mean, Councilman was the one pushing it forward, but I think that in order to keep it constant and accept the same message, it's important that we don't interrupt the process. So, Councilman, thank you.
I would just say a couple of things. One is, I think that, as I said before, is that, I mean, what we're trying to do is we're trying to make a statement. And I think that the statement is clear here. The language which I poured through, that I looked at to make sure that it included, if somebody comes along and calls it something else, I'm certainly not affiliated with any presidential campaign, and I'm not, you know, trying to say, you know, that's not what this is about. It's about an idea. I do think that the idea of this is really about making statements about education, and I think that if we look at, you know, other, and like I said, if it's the will of council to add something, I understand, and I'm not going to try to fight it too strongly. But I also think that this is very comprehensive. It's comprehensive, it's a statement, and it covers everything that needs to be covered. And if something else comes along that provides national health insurance for every person in the United States for all necessary medical care, including prescription drugs, hospitals, and I could read this whole thing, and there's a different name by it, I think the point is going to be received about what this council seems like we're on the precipice of doing, and what we're supporting is as far as this big idea. And I would once again just, you know, quote my dear friend the congresswoman, who said, like, if other ideas come along in the meantime that there are votes for that improve the healthcare system, yeah, we're behind those too. But over the long term, I think that, you know, this type of comprehensive change, what we're doing is we're making a statement that this is what we're looking at down the road. Thank you.
Clearly the system is broken. This is what we're doing tonight, passing this resolution, isn't going to fix that, but it is a small pushback and speaking up against the broken system. And if enough municipalities, enough individuals do that, there'll be a groundswell that I don't think will be something that you can ignore anymore. And I don't think our representatives in Washington will be able to say that it's not popular, there's no support for it, when there's an overwhelming support, when individual municipalities stand up and say that this is what needs to happen to help individuals and help family across our communities and our nation. So obviously I'll be supporting this tonight as well. I think the question at hand is, do we make a small change here that in the grand scheme I don't think is going to affect one thing or the other, but I know that this is a draft resolution. I think, is this, other than crossing out the word Bethlehem and putting another municipality in, is this any different than what you pulled?
I had several citizens had reached out to me with kind of copies. I think if you look around, a lot of these things are relatively the same. I did kind of combine a couple different things. I wanted to put it on one page. I wanted to try to bring things together. It is not by any means, you go to different cities, different people want to add different lines in there about whatever it might be.
Sure.
But it's the general point, and there's some kind of tenets that all of these have. But it is not a mirror image of what's in
everything. And, you know, as you were talking earlier, Mr. Reynolds, about the fact this is concise and specific to what the general feel for is for Medicare for All, I saw a lot of heads over here nodding in agreeance with folks who, you know, in all honesty, live this and talk about it all the time. So, I mean, I would kind of defer to those folks to say that if they feel comfortable with this, I'd be willing to support it as is without an amendment. So I'll kind of turn back to Ms. Cramsey Smith and see if she has any other thoughts.
I guess, again, I mean, I'm going to support it either way, but I'm just trying to play devil's advocate and think that we don't know what the future holds. I'm hopeful, as all of us seem to agree, that we feel that healthcare needs to be universal and inclusive for everyone, but there's a lot of different plans on the table. Most of them are similar, some are different, and I guess I'm just trying to look forward as far as if we're going to support a plan that meets our goal of healthcare for all and addressing the spiraling healthcare cost. And it may not be Medicare for All, but it may be very, very similar. But again, if no one wants to do the addendum, I'll still support it.
I do think that's implied, obviously. You know, if somebody were to come in with a different name but accomplishes all this, I think Bethlehem would still be on the credit side of saying that we were one of the early adopters of forward thinking and fair thinking in the terms of healthcare for all that need it. So, I mean, at this point, if there's any other comments from members of council, there's no motion on the table currently, but if we are to make any amendment to this, it has to be specific in its verbiage and something that we can write on paper before we take our vote this evening. Because I do think it's important to take a final vote on this evening and not table it so that we can add a few words later on. Mr. Vaughn?
I'm comfortable with voting on this as is. I think the message stays the same. I'd be comfortable with just calling the roll and passing our votes.
I second that.
Do you wish to make a motion?
No, that's fine.
Understood. Mr. Reynolds?
Just one last thing is that I think that it deserves mentioning, and I'm proud to call everybody up, or my colleague, and this wouldn't have happened 10 years ago, and it wouldn't have happened 5 years ago. But the conversation has changed in this country and in this city, and that's something that I think everybody behind this table and everybody out there should be really, really proud of. Thank you, Mr. Walton.
Clerk, please call the roll.
Ms. Negron?
Aye.
Mr. Reynolds?
Aye.
Dr. Van Wart?
Aye.
Mr. Callahan?
Aye.
Mr. Colon?
Aye.
Ms. Cramsey Smith?
Aye.
Mr. Waldron?
Aye. Passes 7-0. Thank you, folks. We're going to continue on with our agenda. If you are wishing to step out at this later hour, you're welcome to do so. If you can, in just a quiet tone, because we do have a lot more to get through on our agenda this evening. Resolution 10B,
Be it resolved that the City of Bethlehem requests a PA Small Water and Sewer Program grant of $450,000 from the Commonwealth Financing Authority to be used for installation of a water main extension in the city's water service territory. The resolution is sponsored by Mr. Cologne and Dr. Van Wert.
Discussion? The clerk, please call the roll.
Ms. Negron?
Aye.
Mr. Reynolds?
Aye.
Dr. Van Wert?
Aye.
Mr. Callahan?
Aye.
Mr. Cologne?
Aye.
Ms. Cramsey Smith?
Aye.
Mr. Waldron?
Aye. Passes 6-0. All right. Resolution 10C.
Be it resolved that the City of Bethlehem hereby requests a multimodal transportation fund grant of $315,000 from the Pennsylvania Department of Transportation to be used for Northside 2027 pedestrian safety improvements, and the city hereby designates the mayor and the city controller as the officials to execute all documents and agreements between the City of Bethlehem and the Pennsylvania Department of Transportation to facilitate and assist in obtaining the requested grant. The resolution is sponsored by Mr. Cologne and Dr. Van Wert.
Discussion? Mr. Reynolds?
Just quickly, I want to thank Ms. Heller, and I want to thank Ms. Corner, and I want to thank the administration for applying for this. When we created the Northside 2027 plan and we went through the meetings, this was an area of a lot of focus, and I want to, that's how these plans get done, is piece by piece, grant by grant, project by project. So I just want to say thank you, and I'll be supporting this tonight.
Clerk, please call the roll.
Ms. Negron?
Aye.
Mr. Reynolds?
Aye.
Dr. Van Wert?
Aye.
Mr. Callahan?
Aye.
Mr. Cologne?
Aye.
Ms. Cramsey Smith?
Aye.
Mr. Waldron?
Aye. Passes 7-0. Resolution 10D.
Be it resolved that the City Council of the City of Bethlehem approves by adoption of this resolution the proposed intermunicipal transfer of a restaurant liquor license number R3759 into the City of Bethlehem by Weiss Markets, Inc., subject to approval by the Pennsylvania Liquor Control Board. The resolution is sponsored by Mr. Cologne and Dr. Van Wert.
Discussion? Mr. Kwan?
Briefly, I'm going to support this tonight. Good luck to Wise Markets and your new business venture, and thanks for expanding here in Bethlehem.
Yeah, we see a fair number of these come across our desk. Anytime they are in the realm of a large corporation that seems well-organized and thoughtful about their approach, it makes our decision pretty easy. So I thank you for doing that this evening. Clerk, please call the roll.
Ms. Negron?
Aye.
Mr. Reynolds?
Aye.
Dr. Van Wert?
Aye.
Mr. Callahan?
Aye.
Mr. Cologne?
Aye.
Ms. Cramsey Smith?
Aye.
Mr. Waldron?
Aye. Passes 7-0. Resolution 10E.
Be it resolved by the Council of the City of Bethlehem that the Mayor and the Controller and or such other city officials as deemed appropriate by the City Solicitor are hereby authorized to execute an agreement with Good Plumbing Heating Air Conditioning, Inc. for ADA upgrades to public bathrooms at Monocacy Park, Yasco Pool, and Clearview Pool. The resolution is sponsored by Mr. Cologne and Dr. Van Wert.
Discussion? Clerk, please call the roll.
Ms. Negron?
Aye.
Mr. Reynolds?
Aye.
Dr. Van Wert?
Aye.
Mr. Callahan?
Aye.
Mr. Cologne?
Aye.
Ms. Cramsey Smith?
Aye.
Mr. Waldron?
Aye. Passes 7-0. Resolution 10F.
Be resolved by the Council of the City of Bethlehem that the Mayor and the Controller and or such other city officials as deemed appropriate by the City Solicitor are hereby authorized to execute an agreement with Brandon Stanton, Inc., TA, BSI Electrical Contractors, for electrical construction work related to the wastewater treatment plant bar screen and detritus replacement project. The resolution is sponsored by Mr. Cologne and Dr. Van Wert.
Discussion? Please call the roll.
Ms. Negron?
Aye.
Mr. Reynolds?
Aye.
Dr. Van Wert?
Aye.
Mr. Callahan?
Aye.
Mr. Cologne?
Aye.
Ms. Cramsey Smith?
Aye.
Mr. Waldron?
Aye. Passes 7-0. Resolution 10G.
Be it resolved by the Council of the City of Bethlehem that the Mayor and the Controller and or such other city officials as deemed appropriate by the City Solicitor are hereby authorized to execute an agreement with LB Industries for general construction services related to the wastewater treatment plant bar screen and detritus replacement project. The resolution is sponsored by Mr. Cologne and Dr. Van Wert.
Discussion? Clerk, please call the roll.
Ms. Negron?
Aye.
Mr. Reynolds?
Aye.
Dr. Van Wert?
Aye.
Mr. Callahan?
Aye.
Mr. Cologne?
Aye.
Ms. Cramsey Smith?
Aye.
Mr. Waldron?
Aye. Passes 7-0. Resolution 10H.
Be resolved by the Council of the City of Bethlehem that the Mayor and the Controller and or such other city officials as deemed appropriate by the City Solicitor are hereby authorized to execute an agreement with Tri-County Mechanical, Inc. for ventilation construction services related to the wastewater treatment plant bar screen and detritus replacement project. The resolution is sponsored by Mr. Cologne and Dr. Van Wert.
Discussion? Clerk, please call the roll.
Ms. Negron?
Aye.
Mr. Reynolds?
Aye.
Dr. Van Wert?
Aye.
Mr. Callahan?
Aye.
Mr. Cologne?
Aye.
Ms. Cramsey Smith?
Aye.
Mr. Waldron?
Aye. Passes 7-0. Resolution 10I.
Be it resolved by the Council of the City of Bethlehem that the mayor and the controller and or such other city officials as deemed appropriate by the city solicitor are hereby authorized to execute an agreement with Urban Research and Development Corporation for the South Bethlehem Planning Study. The resolution is sponsored by Mr. Colon and Dr. Van Wert.
Mr. Callahan?
Thank you. Is Ms. Heller still here? Is she? Could you come up, please? I had sent out a memo, I think everybody got it, and Ms. Heller had sent a reply back to me. Can you just briefly tell council what the memo said?
Your memo?
Yeah, no, your memo response, because I don't think they have seen it.
Okay. you asked about some different components about the process of how we got to this contract. You wanted a list of all of the plans that we have done in South Bethlehem for the last 10 or 15 years, and our response was that we can put that together. It'll take us a little time to do that, but we'll get that to you in the near future.
Thank you.
We weren't able to do that today.
Right. That's it. That's what I wanted to do. Okay. I just wanted to let them know what, you know, what the response better.
Okay.
You know, so anyways, I don't mind having a study on this. It's going to cost the city. So it's a $40,000 study, right?
I think it's $47,000.
And 25 is coming from the grant, and the rest is from the city.
It's 22 from the grant and 24 from the city, so right. $46,000.
So I just don't want to duplicate any work. So if it's council's will, I'd like to just wait until. Do you think you get the studies back to us by next meeting?
We'll get it to you quickly. We feel that this is a different study, a different analysis than what we've done in the past. This is something that we would like to do to take on something new, to answer some new questions for us about the type of development and that we're seeing in the South Side. How is it coordinated with both zoning and historic preservation? And do our current ordinances and policies really support our goals and objectives on those two sometimes differing sets of objectives for historic preservation and for planning and development?
So I'm not sure what study it was, but the city did a study and we had identified all of the historic structures over on the South Side. Do you know what year that was?
We did, there's a historic preservation plan for the city. I have to guess, I think it was about 2009.
So are we looking to add structures, new structures that are now historic onto the...
That's not really the goal of this, no. We know what our historic resources are on the South Side.
Are we going to expand a historic district?
I don't think that's really a goal of this project.
All right, so if there's more, let me know. But between the Blight study, there was a 4th Street study, correct? Wasn't there a 4th Street study or a 3rd Street study that was done years ago?
I think 4th Street was really just for some streetscape enhancements. It was a little bit different.
There was comprehensive zoning done with it?
We adopted a new zoning ordinance in 2012.
Yep. And then does that include the comprehensive plan too?
The comprehensive plan was separate. That was 2009.
And then how about the famous Jeff Speck walkability study?
The walkability study was completed, I believe, in 2008. Although, again, I would have to
take it. So my only concern is this: I don't want to spend the money on things that we've already done. And the only thing that's really changed down there in the last 10 years, since majority of these studies were done, was the parking garage, which was already on the radar at that time. And I think it was even mentioned in a couple of those studies, right?
It may have been, sure.
So, and the Polk Street are the 510 flats, isn't it? So there's actually three new developmental projects down there that, and two of them were already on some of these studies were already on the radar. So I don't know I'm not sure what's changed in order to warrant spending, you know, $24,000 in taxpayer money. I'm just asking that we get the information. And if some of the things that you and Ms. Carner want to get done are not included in those past studies, I don't have a problem with, okaying it if, you know, if it's the will of council. But I would prefer that we at least look at those studies and hopefully get it done in a quick time frame. I'm not looking to delay or stall. I just want to find out what is already done, because nothing's really changed down there.
There is a lot of development pressure in the south side, which is not a bad thing. We have a beautiful downtowns, north side and south side. There is a demand for new residential units and other development, and that is a good thing. We want to see that the development occurs would be compatible with the neighborhoods that surround it. We have some historic districts and historic resources, and yet also in the core of the city, we have our most liberal zoning. And in some instances, it's really not compatible. And we want to look at how we can balance demands of historic preservation and also of development in a compatible way. And that's what we want to look at in a comprehensive way. So that may entail some revisions to design guidelines. It may entail some revisions to the zoning ordinance. We've had some suggestions from the consultant that we could take a look at some computer software like SketchUp to help us to visualize what some development could look like. It may entail some change to some mapping. We don't know what the answers will be yet, but those are the
zoning
kinds of
mapping.
It may be zoning mapping.
And so, I mean, the main thing I got out of was zoning was going to be changed, possibly. Height limits on buildings are going to be changed.
I don't know that for sure. I think we just want to take a comprehensive look at how we can make our ordinances and our policies more compatible.
You had mentioned or that there was an RFP put out or a request for.
We followed the standard RFP process, yes.
And who were the two people that submitted?
We got two responses. One was URDC, and the other was actually an engineering firm. It's a very large engineering firm where they have planners on staff and some people that do historic preservation on staff. But they seem to be have more technical expertise rather than design expertise that we thought we could get from URDC.
So if I read it correctly, you want to have this study, possibly change zoning, height requirements, and then also limit the amount of teardowns on certain buildings. Who's going to dictate which buildings they are that are limited?
Well, every planning study entails, every project that we do entails public input. So we would work with the public to take a look at what is important to the community. We would also rely on the consultants to help us maybe prioritize some of the historic resources within the districts, because not everything within the district is equally as important as a historic resource. So we would take a look at maybe how to prioritize what some of the more important streetscapes or blocks or properties might be.
All right. And then there was something I read too about having or forming a committee. Is this going to be a permanent committee, or is this a committee to look at the plan, or there's going to be a new? I mean, we already have planning, we already have zoning, we already have the mayor's Southside Task Force, we already have the HCC over there. It all eventually comes back to us anyways, right?
Community outreach is always important for any of the projects that we do, and we try to do community outreach in different ways. So sometimes it's through a public meeting. We'll also be doing key person interviews with some community leaders on the south side, but it is helpful to us to have a small core committee that we work with, that we meet with fairly regularly throughout the planning study, so that we can bounce some ideas off of them and get feedback and do that on a fairly regular basis. We're not able to do that with public meetings. It's just too unwieldy to do that. So a small core group can be very helpful.
So that core group or that small committee is only going to be temporary. It's not going to be a permanent.
Through the length of the study.
Just for the length of the study.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Do you think you can get to us all those studies I mentioned and any other studies that, just so we can look at, I mean, I don't want to duplicate the work. If we can go back to URDC and say, listen, we've already studied this and nothing's changed over on this. We've already studied this and this and this and the walkability and everything. And we just did a comprehensive zoning and there's only three buildings, new buildings added, right?
Well, I don't know that that three new buildings are really that critical. Whenever we would start off with a new study, with a new consultant, we would take a look at the resources that we already have on hand. We would share with them, you know, all of our GIS mapping, all of our prior plans, all of the study and analysis that we've already done. We would consolidate that and give that to the consultant so that we're not repeating our efforts when we look at new ideas or new questions.
So do you think you can get us those studies within by the next council meeting?
We'll get them to you as soon as we can. Right. We'll get them to you in a week.
All right. Yeah, I would appreciate it. And I'm not trying to create undue work for you. I just don't want to waste taxpayer money on studies that we've already done. So I don't know if it's a world council, but I'd like to table it, this vote until the next council meeting. And that's my... Just so we can all look at the studies and see what's already there and what's not there. Maybe we can go back to URDC and say, listen, we could possibly cut back this and this item off of the study because it's already been done. It can save us some money. That's all.
Is that a motion?
It is.
Is there a second?
I'll second it. I also would have a question.
There's no discussion on a motion, so we'll have to have a vote. Clerk, please call the roll on the motion to table resolution 10I.
Till just the next meeting, that's all. Whatever that date is.
That would be a postponement.
I'd like to postpone it then.
Then there's discussion. So you're going to pull your motion?
I would. I would like to.
So
I thought it was clear, so I apologize. I'm not looking to permanently stop this study. I'm just asking until we get the data and information. And, you know, I've heard several council members always talking about getting the data. So, I think it would be proper for us to do our due diligence and read it and find out what we already know and what we don't know. And then maybe Ms. Carner can go back to URDC and say, this information has not changed, and we have this information, but this is where we'd like a narrower scope for the new study. That's all. So my motion is to, Mr. Spurk, what is it?
Postpone
until the next city council meeting, whatever date that is, Mr. Badami.
11-17.
Is there a second?
I'll second it.
Discussion on the motion?
I'm sorry, it's 11-19.
Mr. Kwan?
Thank you, President Walter. Just a quick question for Ms. Heller. Ms. Heller, the gentleman to my left keeps saying not a lot has changed. Would you say that the scope of this project encompasses things that maybe, and I think you alluded to this before, this is looking at compatibility and addressing things that, in your opinion, have not been addressed before. So regardless of what may have been static, dynamic, same, different, or anywhere in between some of the previous studies that were alluded to, the scope of what's in front of us is for new information with new goals. Would you agree with that?
It's to anticipate future development and to provide for more opportunities that future development would be more compatible with the surrounding area. I think we've seen very good development, frankly, in the examples that you've given, but there have been a lot of, I think, recently challenging projects that the Historic Commission has had to review and that our office has had to review. And it's very helpful, I believe, to developers to be very clear in our ordinances, in our policies about what it is, what kinds of development that we want to see. I think it's helpful to developers to do that up front. It's not helpful to them, I think, when we have ordinances and policies that are not compatible with each other, and I think we have that situation now, and we can write that by modifying some of our policies or goals or ordinances so that we are more clear.
Thank you, Ms. Heller. And then, of course, any amendments to the existing zoning ordinance would come before council to vote.
Yes, correct. Any ordinances, they all come before you, all those amendments.
Thank you, Ms. Heller. I have no further questions.
Ms. Grimes.
Again, it's not that I'm against this at all, but I'm just wondering that I know development is an issue, it's a hot issue in this city, and we've been to meetings together on the south side that there's a lot of concern among citizens about the housing issue and crisis. And what I'm wondering is, can we implement within, if we go with this urban research, okay, program, can we have them also look into looking at housing that is affordable on the south side, because that's in line with development and zoning, maybe look at inclusionary zoning?
Well, affordable housing is a big, big issue. We got this grant through the Certified Local Government Program, which we are a part of, and it's really a historic preservation program through the State Historic Preservation Office. So the scope of what we can do is somewhat limited because the Historic Preservation Office gave us this money. To look at affordable housing is much, much broader. Some of the things that we may implement, if changes that may come out of this may help and support affordable housing, but it wouldn't be the main goal or objective of what we would be looking for. One of the projects that was recently before our office but was withdrawn, and I think you are familiar with this, a developer proposed to take down 4 single-family detached homes and then build 8 taller townhomes in that area, and that was withdrawn, but there was concern from the neighborhood about a project like that, and there could be some zoning changes that we could look at that would be able to address that kind of development in advance.
So there may be a possibility of them looking at it to some extent.
Right, I think it wouldn't be the main goal of what we would be looking at, but it could be a side benefit.
Right, yeah, that's all I'm asking, if they can sort of incorporate it,
right?
Because it's all interrelated.
It is interrelated.
Right. Thanks.
Mr. Yamas?
Ms. Howard, are we under any time constraints?
Well, we are, frankly. It's a grant. It's good for a year. We would need to complete the study by, I believe it's the end of June of next year.
So, I mean, I'm not trying to block the study. I'm just trying to find out, because I don't think anybody other than Mr. Reynolds was around, and maybe the mayor, well, the mayor was. I don't think anybody else was around when any of those studies were done. And all I'm asking for is there, would you be opposed to a 2-week delay in just getting us the information, so we have the information to read to see what studies, what's already been covered in the study? That's all I'm trying to find out.
Well, we can compile the list for you, certainly. That's not a problem. What we find often with these grants is that it is a very tight timeline. We get awarded a grant. It takes a while till we get a contract from whoever awards us the grant. Then we need to have a public RFP process. It needs to be advertised. We have to have time for them to respond. We have to review the rewards. We come before you for approval of contracts, and then we can actually start a study. And so it's a tight timeline. It is a tight timeline. We can get you the information, but...
Do you think the 2 weeks is asking too much?
Just
to get us the information?
I guess it's up to council members to determine whether or not the information is necessary, frankly, whether it's even necessary, since we would be compiling that information for a consultant anyway. We don't want to duplicate work efforts either. We have a lot to do. We're not trying to create new work, and we don't want to pay URDC to create new work or to duplicate work. I think there's an important question that we need to address, and we want to be pretty specific with URDC about what it is we want them to do.
And that's my whole purpose in asking for all the studies that have been done, because I don't want to duplicate any work. And I just think that it would, you know, I think it's up to council to do due diligence to look at those studies and see what has been already studied. And if we want to add anything to a new study, I'm all for it. I just think that asking for a two-week delay, and that's it. That's all I'm asking for is a two-week delay just to look at the studies and get the information that you have. I'm sure you don't even remember everything that was in all those studies. But
well, much of it's really not related to the very specific question that we're asking URDC to look at. We want to be thorough in what we do with them. We want to have public input and public comment. All of those things take time. For us to be able to complete this before June and wrap up and close out a grant is a very tight timeline. We do need to really...
Well, the timeline that you submitted was 7 months.
Pardon me?
The timeline that you had submitted was over a seven-month period. So we're looking at 7 months.
Which is a pretty short timeline for planning study.
So we're looking at 7 months and 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
Versus a year. I mean, I'm just trying to get more data, that's all. And if it's the will of council to not want to look at the past studies, because I wasn't on council, I don't think anybody, no one would hear knows anything about any of those studies other than Mr. Reynolds.
That's not true, actually.
Well,
Mr. Cowan, would you be open to having other people give their input?
I would. I forgot that she's
very knowledgeable. There's other council members who want to just make comment. Mr. Reynolds?
Question, Ms. Heller. Haven't we already talked about this? Didn't we have this conversation last year during, I believe it was the budget hearing?
Well, it came before the Finance Committee.
It came before the Finance Committee.
And it was discussed at that time, I believe. I wasn't at that meeting, but I believe there was discussion and question at that time. And it did come before you as part of the overall budget.
And it came before us as the overall budget. And then I believe it was discussed as well during the budget presentation, if I remember correctly.
I believe so, yes. I think there were very specific questions about the project.
Yeah, and I would just say this, because I want to get through this quickly so I can vote for the co-op and everybody can go home. is that those studies, and I remember the conversation at the time, is like those studies, while important, covering different things, one of the things that has come up over and over again is this balance between development on the south side and historic preservation. And the administration, and I give Ms. Heller a lot of credit for admitting might be the wrong word, but I think you understand the word I'm looking for, is saying like this is something that we need to study and that we need to take a look at. And that takes some professionalism and that takes a look at these situations and say like we need to look at this from a different point of view. We have a planning department. She is our director of planning. Ms. Heller has been here for all of those studies. I have sat next to Ms. Heller at many meetings for a long time, oftentimes. And one thing that I know is that I don't believe that we would be looking at answering a question here if the department was able to spend this $20,000 on something else. And I think it's a question that a lot of people are wondering about. I think that we need a blueprint. One of the things that we've talked about in the past is that the administration and future administrations should be able to, before the project go to the Planning Commission or other places, be able to give clear responses. And I think that this is in that spirit and this is in that direction. I also, above all else, think that the Planning Department would not be calling for a study here if they already knew the answers to the questions. And ultimately, City Council is the one that makes a lot of these changes, whether or not they're ordinance or things like that. And with that being said, I will be supporting this tonight, partly because this is something that we've talked about before, and partly because these studies have also been available for a long time for people to be able to internalize. Thank you.
Mr. Grant?
Thank you, President Waldron. I want to say that, first of all, commend Darlene, Alicia, and the mayor. In my humble opinion, this is a proactive response to the concerns that have been presented for a couple of years, at least. And to me, in a very personal note, is an answer to my prayers. So thank you. I will definitely support that this is done ASAP. Thank you.
We'll the clerk please call the roll on the motion to postpone?
Ms. Negron?
Nay.
Mr. Reynolds?
Nay.
Dr. Van Wert?
Nay.
Mr. Callahan?
Aye.
Mr. Cologne?
Nay.
Ms. Cramsey-Smith?
Aye.
Mr. Waldron?
Nay. Fails 5-2. Is there any discussion, additional discussion on Resolution 10-I? Mr. Callahan?
My only concern is who will be making up the committee?
We don't always make up a committee prior to initiating a project. Likely we would have a representative from HCC, we would have local residents and business owners from the south side, a developer from the south side, certainly our office would be represented on that committee.
Mayor, I would like to be on that committee if possible, just representing the finance committee. I mean, we're talking about major dollars. And you have a year and a half left in your term. I don't know who the next mayor is going to be, but I feel like there's an old saying, "Garbage in, garbage out," and I'm worried that there's some influences being put there that have been in the past month with some pressure put on other entities during voting on RFPs. And I talked to you about it personally, and I have a big concern where this is going with Ms. Carner at the helm of this. I really do. I expressed to you that she had reached out to people of the Parking Authority Board the day of a vote, which I thought was highly unethical, to put pressure on them, and you know this is true, to accept a lower bid. There are people in Allentown who went to jail for doing that. So, Mr. Reynolds, it's the truth. And Ms. Carner, did you or did you not call the board and put pressure on them? Did you not ask two people during the day of the vote to renegotiate a lower bid contract?
Point of order, President Waldron.
Does that have anything to do with the resolution in front of us?
I'm asking her a question. Because she
I hope she doesn't lower herself to answer it.
She's the head of the department, Mr. President, that's heading this study. So my concern is that I'm not sure where this is going. And I'm not comfortable with her, with some of the things that she's done in the last couple months. One of the things I'm not going to bring up right now, because there's I've asked the mayor for an investigation on it. So I'm just letting you know that that was highly unethical. And for her...
Point of order.
I'm not done speaking yet.
Point of order.
Point of order.
What's your order?
You can't accuse people of being unethical. You can't do that as in Robert's rules.
It's my opinion. I'm not accusing...
And I'm calling a point of order.
Okay. It's my opinion that it was unethical. And I've had the conversation with you, Mr. Walter, too, about it. And there's several people that know what I'm talking about. So all I'm asking for is that we get council representation on that committee. That's all I'm asking for. Thank you very much.
And I can imagine the mayor may be open to putting a council member on, but I can probably pretty assure you that it won't be you.
Thank you.
If there's any other additional dirty laundry you'd like to bring out, maybe save it for new business so these fine folks can head home. The clerk would please call the roll on Resolution 10-I.
Ms. Negron?
Aye.
Mr. Reynolds?
Aye.
Dr. Van Wert?
Aye.
Mr. Callahan?
Nay.
Mr. Cologne?
Aye.
Ms. Cramsey-Smith?
Aye.
Mr. Waldron?
Aye. Passes 6-1. Resolution 10-J.
Now, therefore, be it resolved by the City Council of the City of Bethlehem that the five-year consolidated plan for fiscal year 2020-2024 and the annual action plan for fiscal year 2020 for the City of Bethlehem for the period from January 1st, 2020 to December 31st, 2020 are hereby approved and the mayor is authorized to provide the necessary assurances and certifications to the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development and to submit the FY 2020-2024 consolidated plan and FY 2020 action plan for HUD approval. The resolution is sponsored by Mr. Colon and Dr. Van Wert.
Mr. Colon?
Thank you, President Waldron. I just want to turn to Mr. Spurk, our solicitor, quick. At the committee meeting, and I think since then in some conversations, things have come up. Mr. Spurk, can you just, as most of us on council, if not all of us, belong to the food co-op, do you see any conflict with us voting to support them receiving CDBG money?
I do not. I think that, it's my understanding, I think six of the council members at least are members of the food co-op. The significance under the Ethics Act would be not so much membership. I don't understand that there is anybody who's an officer or director, but as a member, you're also a part owner. I think there's something like 660 households, or something like that. So the proportionate percentage of ownership would be extremely small. In the Ethics Act, the percentage of ownership has to be 5% to be a conflict of interest. Ethics Act limits that to businesses for profit, because typically nonprofits don't have ownership. However, the Ethics Act also contains language to the effect that there's no conflict of interest if the financial interest is de minimis, that is to say, has an insignificant economic impact. It's my understanding that the money that's put in initially to become a member doesn't grow or like a stock or something like that for a corporation, but rather would be the same amount that you would take out. I understand there's a financial benefit to some discounts and perhaps some other things similar to like a bonus card at Giant or something like that, you would earn something. But it's my opinion that that would be similarly of an insignificant economic impact. And as a complete backstop, when there are six members who would potentially have to abstain, the Ethics Act provides that everybody can vote. Otherwise, the government body would not be able to act. So, yeah, I'm confident that all members can vote without any conflict.
Thank you, Mr. Spurk, for that clarification. And that being said, I will be supporting the food co-op, or the what's in front of us today, including the support for the food co-op. And thanks again for everybody for coming out tonight and hanging out this long with us. Thank you.
Mr. Reynolds?
And just one other comment about at the committee meeting, I pulled out my number 41 card, but I'm also in search of getting the next card, which is a number one card, and I had this conversation with Colleen and several people several months ago, and I understand why it's not at the top of the list. But also the way that the ownership works is that one day, if the food co-op is profitable and produces a certain amount of money, you get a dividend based on how much you use the particular co-op. And generally, if you look at co-ops around the country that have also gotten CDBG funding, those dividends, you know, obviously it would depend if you how much you spend there, but you're looking at a small amount of money. But even with that being said, and even if this conversation never happened, I already talked to Natalie, so I don't have to call her, is that the dividend one day for our house, I just want going back into the co-op anyway. Education programs, working with TJ and William Penn, and whatever that might be. That's my personal opinion. That would be my personal opinion outside of this, is that the benefit of this is not just about, you know, me saving money, but it's about that whatever that profit would be, I would want going back into. And I know Colleen has said that she's talked to the officers about how to develop that program. Obviously, we're a couple years away from that even being an issue. But I know when I've had conversations with other members of City Council, it's been a similar thought. But that's just one comment on the dividend. And as Mr. Spurk said, it's correct that when you buy your share, your ownership, whatever it might be, however much, you know, and I think when I originally bought it was a couple hundred dollars, is if I ever decide not to be a member, I get that couple hundred dollars back, the same amount that I paid in. It's not a stock, it doesn't grow, and things like that, which I do think is important as far as that's concerned. So just one comment there on the dividend. Just a couple other 30-second comments. I want to thank everybody for coming out. You know, the fact that people wait here for 3 hours to watch us vote yes, which I think they probably knew was coming, is symbolic of the way the co-op has grown. And I think that, you know, watching the co-op grow from when I became number 41 in July of 2013, I believe it was when
first started, it's not a sprint, it's not a 5K, but it's a marathon. And it is a testament to how you grow a community. We've talked a lot about Touchstone Theater and their festival, and one of the things they talked about is how do we create a new identity. And new identities aren't created quickly, they're created with projects like the co-op, as far as bringing people together that have similar interests from different parts of our city, whether or not they be demographically, racially, geographically, and things like that. So I will be supporting this. It is a huge project for the city. I think the biggest project that we have going. It's a huge part of potentially where they go in Northside 2027. And it's something that I know most people in this room are members of, and I will be supporting. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. President. I want to thank everybody that has worked so hard over the years. I think I've been a member maybe 5-6 years now, and Ms. Ritter met me over at Apollo, and she was very influential, and as I'm sure all of you know, but she's a hell of a salesperson, and I want to thank all of you for all the hard work you've done over the years, and I will be supporting you. Thank you.
Dr. Vanmark?
Just very briefly, I too am very happy you all came out, and I'm always awed by your indefatigable energy towards this cause. I am very sensitive to concerns from citizens over conflict of interest, as much as I am comforted by Mr. Smirk's findings. I did reach out to Mr. Allen, who's the chair of the co-op, and along the lines of what Mr. Reynolds said, I will be relinquishing all my dividends back to the co-op to be reinvested into the co-op and other low-income families who might be able to benefit, just because it's really important. Even if there isn't a true conflict of interest, the appearance of a conflict of interest is worth noting and addressing, and so that's why I decided to do that. But most of all, thank you all very much for everything that you've done. I'm a strong supporter of the co-op, and I think it's going to change a big part of our city. So thank you.
Thank you, President Waldron. I am going to say that from day one, when I heard about the co-op, my eyes just lit up, but I'm probably the one member of council that is not a member of the co-op, not because I don't support it, but because I didn't have one penny when I was approached to be a member of the co-op, but I am a very supportive of it. I can't wait until we have something in there. Saying that, I want to go back to the first comments that Mr. Gallagher mentioned, and I really thank you for what you said, because you mentioned that your family is a supportive, you have been supportive in your blog talking about it, yet you want to make sure that all the T's are crossed, the dots and row. And I think that we heard that from everybody. I even though I'm not in the committee in the economic development, I try to be at every meeting, because it's a topic that is extremely important to me. And due to other commitment, I couldn't be here last time. However, I with all my heart trust the judgment of the committee. And again, all T's are crossed and all the dots and row. I definitely have to support this resolution. Thank you, President Walter.
Clerk, please call the roll. Ms. Negron?
Aye.
Mr. Reynolds?
Aye.
Dr. Van Wert?
Aye.
Mr. Callahan?
Aye.
Mr. Colon?
Aye.
Mr. Cramsey Smith?
Aye.
Mr. Walter?
Aye.
Passes 7-0. Resolution 10K.
Be resolved by the Council of the City of Bethlehem that the Mayor and the Controller and or such other city officials as deemed appropriate by the City Solicitor are hereby authorized to execute a use permit agreement with the Greater Lehigh Valley Chamber of Commerce by and through its Downtown Bethlehem Association for the Clash of the Carols. Resolution is sponsored by Mr. Colon and Dr. Van Wert.
Discussion? Clerk, please call the roll. Ms. Negron?
Aye.
Mr. Reynolds?
Aye.
Dr. Van Wert?
Aye.
Mr. Callahan?
Aye.
Mr. Colon?
Aye.
Ms. Cramsey Smith?
Aye.
Mr. Waldron?
Aye. Passes 7-0.
Resolution 10L.
Be resolved by the Council of the City of Bethlehem that the Mayor and the Controller and or such other city officials as deemed appropriate by the City Solicitor are hereby authorized to execute a use permit agreement with the Greater Lehigh Valley Chamber of Commerce by its Downtown Bethlehem Association for the Christmas City Village event. The resolution is sponsored by Mr. Colon and Dr. Van Wert.
Discussion? Clerk, please call the roll.
Ms. Negron?
Aye.
Mr. Reynolds?
Aye.
Dr. Mineral?
Aye.
Mr. Callahan?
Aye.
Mr. Colon?
Aye.
Ms. Cramsey Smith?
Aye.
Mr. Waldron?
Aye. Passes 7-0. Accept the motion in a second to consider resolution 10M through 10R as a group and ask the clerk to call the roll on that motion.
So moved. Second.
Motion by Ms. Negron, second by Dr. Benoit.
Ms. Negron?
Aye.
Mr. Reynolds?
Aye.
Dr. Van Wert?
Aye.
Mr. Callahan?
Aye.
Mr. Colon?
Aye.
Ms. Cramsey Smith?
Aye.
Mr. Waldron?
Aye. Passes 7-0. If the clerk would please read resolution 10M through 10R.
Certificates of appropriateness are hereby granted for 14 West 4th Street to reface existing vinyl sign, 324th South New Street to install wayfinding signs, 327 Broadway to revise the facade, windows, and roof, 712, 714, 716 East 4th Street to install 3 doors, 3 windows, 3 light fixtures, and stacked stone on the lower portion of the building, 505 East 4th Street to replace the windows and do facade renovations, 462 Main Street to install a new vinyl sign above the existing entryway. The resolutions are sponsored by Mr. Colon and Dr. Van Wert.
Discussion? Clerk, please call the roll.
Ms. Negron?
Aye.
Mr. Reynolds?
Aye.
Dr. Van Wert?
Aye.
Mr. Callahan?
Aye.
Mr. Colon?
Aye.
Ms. Cramsey Smith?
Aye.
Mr. Waldron?
Aye. Passes 7-0. New business. We're approaching everyone's favorite time of year, the 2020 budget meeting schedule. Our first point on that is on Friday, as the mayor touched on. It will be the release of his budget on Friday morning. Following up next Tuesday, we have 3 budget hearings and then our final meeting. We eliminated one and consolidated so we get a little more bang for your buck this year. And so Tuesday, November 12th, these are all at 6 p.m. here in Town Hall. We have our first budget hearing meeting to review the water fund revenue and expenses, water capital budget, sewer fund revenue expenses, sewer capital budget, public works department, liquid fuels fund, stormwater fund, and the non-utility capital fund. Wednesday, November 13th, will be our second hearing, which is the police department, fire department, and golf course enterprise fund. Snuck in there is our second council meeting on November 19th, where we will do first reading of the 2020 budget ordinances. And on Tuesday, the 21st, will be the third budget hearing, which is community development block grant fund, community economic development department, the council, mayor, treasurer, controller, and law bureau, administration, general fund revenue, general expenses, civic expenses, and debt service. And then our final budget meeting will be on Monday, December 9th, for our final budget meeting, followed up by December 17th being the final reading of the 2020 budget ordinances. That is all for new business on my behalf. Any other new business for members of council?
President Waldron.
Yes, Mr. Grant.
Thank you, President Waldron. I just want to say thank you, first of all, to the mayor, the administration, and everybody that played a big role in supporting my leadership with the Pennsylvania Latino Convention. It was very successful. We have way over 700 people, not just from the Lehigh Valley, but across the Commonwealth. Many Latino leaders were here, and it was a very powerful powwow among us. And thank you for being part of it, and thank you for the support. Thank you, President Waldron.
Ms. Cramsey Smith?
I hate to bring this up in the interest of time, but it is very important. I'm going to just address, I want to address an issue to Police Chief DeLuzio and Mrs. Carter. About 2 months ago, we started a block watch in the 700 to 900 block area of Main Street because the neighbors had a lot of concerns about police activity, rentals that are nuisance. And since their time, there have been continued issues. And I have to give a big shout out to Police Chief DeLuzio and Mrs. Carter for helping me and the neighbors with some of those issues. And Sergeant Buskirk has been great as far as the block watch goes. But just recently, there was another incident there that was pretty serious as far as a break-in in, I think, the 700 block of Main Street. And again, I'm not looking for answers tonight because in the interest of time, I just want to throw it out there. And I think people from the block watch are going to be attending the next meeting. So it's just something for you to think about. But the concerns are in that area, not only the safety of the residents, but we have William Penn Elementary. We have a child care there. That area is in between North and South Campus of Moravian College. within a block of the area where the most recent police activity was, or high-rises for the elderly and disabled, and it's within a block of historic Bethlehem. So I think it's an area that really we're starting to see a lot of concerns with, and I really would like to work together to see what we can do. I don't know if we're increase police activity, if there's anti-gang task force money still available, zoning, the L&I as far as the rentals, but it's a real concern within the city that we have to address. So I just want to throw it out there, and again, I think people want to address it at the next council meeting. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other new business for members of council? This meeting is adjourned.